Wait, was that actually recording? No. No. But this is actually recording now, so you know you can say all your stupid remarks now if you want to.
Nation, the Yankees are unstoppable.
All right, that's all we need.
Comic Timing
is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Bitch. Print it. Welcome to episode 100, part 2 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brent Cassino, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levinson, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. We've got two panels in one package here, one a little serious, one ridiculously insane. Vince B. and Wood from 11 o'clock, followed up by Raph and Ange. Who will win? Neither of them. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 100, part 2 of Comic Timing. And we figured we'd go bullpen bulletins this episode, all right? That good with you? They good with you? Okay, fine. It's 11 o'clock comics. We've got two of the members of 11 o'clock on here, and as well as the returning co-host. So I'll introduce him first. Mr. Co-host, not co-host, co-host, back from his week-long hiatus because he was busy doing something else. Brent Cassino, what's going on, Brent?
What's up?
Yo, congratulations on being a part of 100 in one way or another.
Thank you. Thank you. I did my best.
Yeah, man, you like sped back here, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right.
I ran. Well, don't tell the cops.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Unless this man's a cop. Is Vince P, are you a cop?
No, I am not the pigs.
Not me. Whoa.
No.
Whoa.
You know, I was thinking... You have the brain trust of 11 o'clock comics here.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yes.
The beauty is at home. The brains are here.
Are we going to get an origin story? Is that what this means? The brain trust?
It's very pornographic. I don't think it's suitable for your audience.
If we cross our fingers and pray to God, then maybe we'll get the origin story of 11 o'clock comics on this episode. You never know. But
there's a couple snap necks in it, but it's okay.
And might I add, Vince, this is the first time you have been on Comic Timing since episode 10.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm. Back when your boy David Price. Back when your boy David Price was still the co-host.
I know.
Yeah.
And then I stole him from you.
It's true.
You know what? It's all right. You can keep him.
Very nice.
Nice. That was good. David has his own episode 100 looming, if not out already by the time this airs.
Ooh.
For Marvel Noise.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Damn, I'm lagging behind.
Wow. We suck.
Mr. Wood, by the way, welcome back.
Hey, what's going on? This is the first time I've been on your show with my co-host, which is kind of fun.
Yes. So
what up, brother?
What up, man? By the way, before I forget and we get onto the topic, congrats are in order for number one, this 100th episode.
Thank you.
Number two, Ian, for being gainfully employed again.
Thank you.
And most importantly, Brent, for congratulations on being engaged, man. That's great news.
Thank you. Apparently, you got engaged. Yeah.
You know, comics don't go good with the engaged thing. It just doesn't have. I'm gonna have to take you. We'll do lunch or something. I'll talk you out.
There's a guy at work today showing me the article in USA Today that said most marriages end in failure or something like that.
Oh, great!
He's like, you read this now. I was like, okay.
Yeah, well,
you
not need- our marriages though. Vince and I are we are evidence to the contrary.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least I am.
Both Jason and Brent have something in common. They got the hotties.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Vince's wife is no slouch in her own right.
Oh, yes. I've never actually seen a picture of Vince's wife, so I can't actually attest
to
that.
I'll send you some websites.
Okay.
It's just like Ice-T's wife.
Oh, my God.
She's awesome.
And let's not even mention Tiger Woods cheating on his wife. All right, let's move. Let's move
Vince
on.
It's like the lady in the street, but a freak in the bed. So.
Booyah, booyah.
Yes, more rap lyrics. Love them.
It's just like Luda.
All right, well, this episode, just like the last episode that we did here, is going to be on iconic characters, specifically which company has the most iconic characters and why.
We're talking about Kabuki and Powers and...
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know what? If I've learned one thing from working with Wood for so long, it's you got to get the first word in, because if you don't, he's going to pull the rug out from under you. So, I will say this. Let me just flesh out this. I just want to flesh out the question a little bit, because if we're talking iconic characters, but are we talking comic book characters or superheroes?
I think we're talking comic book characters. Yeah.
Okay, comic book characters. Then I have the answer that I think will trump everything.
Go ahead.
Every company, Disney.
Ooh.
Disney trumps all. Even though you have your recognizable superheroes and your pulp heroes like Doc Savage and The Shadow, I don't think there's a more recognizable character worldwide than Mickey Mouse.
Well, I think you're kind of right about that. Yeah, but do they have the universe to go along with it, or is it just Mickey?
Well, they have Duckburg and Donald and Scrooge and Pluto and Pegleg Pete and all those freaks, and then you have like the tertiary characters, like, because Bambi was a comic book character, even though it was a movie first, and every Disney movie spinoff has been in the comics, the Walt Disney's comics and stories. So I don't know. I think Disney's got the jump.
Hmm.
What do you think, Wood?
Yeah, I guess this is, again, how we're going to interpret the topic, because I certainly can't argue with you that Disney, in terms of overall impact and media and marketing and licensing and brand recognition, I mean, they're obviously the king of the heap. I mean, you know, like we talked about with the Marvel-DC merger, I mean, Marvel's the fourth, you know, most valuable brand in the world at $6 billion, and Disney's number one at $30 billion. So that kind of proves your point, right? I mean, there is no more recognizable brand/iconic characters than the House of Mouse. But I guess I was thinking, if you mean from comics, well, then I don't know if I buy into it, just because, again, I don't know that their impact has been as meaningful in comics, or I should say that comics were really the engine for them to become cultural phenomena, you know, like, I mean, they're cultural icons for reasons other than comics, whereas, like, to me, there's no more iconic comic book thing than, like, Superman. To me, he's the ultimate comic icon, I would have to say, in my mind, because he's the progenitor of the superhero genre and the most valuable comic brand.
Well,
I get what you're saying, though.
See, but if you're talking Disney in terms of comics, I think your place of residence is doing you a disservice, because Disney comics don't sell for squat in the United States, but in Europe, they're big doings. I mean, Disney comics sell huge amounts in Europe, and they have for many, many years. So you got to factor that in, too.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I don't think that even the top-selling American comic book is like maybe a third of what the Disney comics sell.
Right.
Overseas. From what I've heard. I don't live there, so.
Sure.
But that's I've read that.
Right. Well, then you have the issue then, if you're going to kind of broaden it to that, then can you make the argument that some of the, you know, the European classic characters, or even more some of the Japanese, you know, like an Akira or an Astro Boy, I mean, they're certainly up there. Yeah. I don't know if they're as iconic as say, a Superman, but I think they have to be up there as well, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right. If we're going to go stay in the States and go cultural penetration, how's that? You like that? I would say I think you're right with Superman, though I'm loath to admit it, because, again, I think this question also has generational issues to it, too, because Superman has a 20-some-year jump on the Marvel characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you ask my grandfather, if he was still alive, he'd probably say Superman. But whereas our generation, I bet you, if you did a poll of all 30 and 40-somethings, I would bet that Spider-Man tops Superman.
Hmm. You're probably right about that.
We have two younger guys on. I mean, you guys are in your 20s, right? Both of you. So, where do you guys stand on this?
Well, let me let Brent speak his mind first, and then I'll tackle it a little bit. Brent,
I think episode's done. Vince said it.
Come on.
No, well, you can talk about boobies now.
I don't know about Spider-Man topping Superman. Not on my part.
Okay. Well, why is that?
Well, if you played my comment from the last episode, I don't know if it's necessary now.
We actually only played the sorry I can't make it part, because I had a feeling you'd have a lot to talk about in this episode.
Okay, good.
That went on for 20 minutes.
Well, I don't know if you're going to do it all.
All right, brother. All right, all right. Come on, come on.
No. I think what I was talking about there, and what I'll just reiterate here, is that there's been more incarnations of Superman and the DC heroes than anything else. Even, you know, Mickey hasn't had a cartoon in, you know, 10 years or so. I'm sure there's some on, in, you know, for preschoolers or whatever. But for the mass market, nothing. Other than, what's that, PS2 game or what, Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
You know, what is the exposure to Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck been to the mainstream core of children and people? You know what I mean?
Not really that much, yeah.
Because Disney Channel doesn't show any cartoons at all, really. Old ones, not during the primetime hours. It's mostly live-action stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cartoon Network is not showing Disney stuff. Toon Disney is now Disney XD, and they're showing, you know, more action-oriented stuff. I don't know if you can find a Disney tune on the television today, which is you can find it on the internet, I'm sure. But I'm talking about television.
Don't forget the weekly Walt Disney Presents show that started off with Mickey every week for. And how long did that show run?
A while.
I mean, whether or not Mickey was in it, I mean, that was the face that opened the show.
Well, so, I think Fran is getting to a very interesting point in the sense that, again, I think Vince is right. If you expand the definition, I mean, Disney remains to this day the most viable brand. But I also think Brent's alluding or illuminating to the point of why Marvel's becoming part of Disney, you know, and Disney came right out and said it. It's because
Disney needs something to show to the mass market that's not so, not that Mickey Mouse is old and outdated, but they want something newer and fresher because obviously if they have to revamp Mickey to be a badass, then his original concept is not connecting with the people out there today.
Right. I mean, right.
Over the last 10 years.
You could say that about every incarnation of Superman.
I agree. I was going to say, all I'm saying is that over the last 10 years, Disney has admitted that their characters outside of the theme parks have lost this generation. The generation below us, the teenagers and younger, are not identifying with Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Chip and Dale's, and even like we did. You know, I mean, I was a kid. I watched, you know, Darkwing Duck and Chip and Dale's Rescue, you know, Rangers and all that. I mean, there were always some kind of Disney cartoon on. And that's not really the case anymore. So I do think if we're talking about, like, the changing of generations, right now Disney is at a point where a lot of their iconic brands are, much to their dismay, losing a bit of their luster. But again, I mean, we're also in a world that's you always want to sort of – you want to entice that younger generation to stick with you. But you're also looking at a world that's progressively getting older, and you have – the vast majority of the world from, say, you know, mid-20s up into senior citizens still, I think, greatly value those characters. So it's just a question of, you know, I think they're doing this because they feel like they need to for the younger generation. But in terms of, like, the whole world and the global brand, it's like TV ratings, you know, like in the key 18 to 39 demo, Disney core brand isn't what it should be. But in, you know, if you extend it out to the total ratings picture, Disney still kick ass. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean,
well, yeah, I'm
especially
sure.
With tween girls.
Yeah, but that's
well,
not
right.
Because,
no, yeah, really, but that's not
because of the classic Disney characters that you're parading around. Is
right. That's High School Musical and Miley Cyrus and iCarly and yeah.
And I was pointing to you know, going back to this. The idea of, you know, more recently Spider-Man, Trump, Superman in terms for younger children. I've seen more Justice League and Superman and Batman cartoon shows than I have Marvel shows.
Right.
Quality ones. I mean, and even in the last 50 years or so, you know, you had the Super Friends, Super Powers, the, you know, there's like multiple incarnations of the Super Friends type show. And then you come out of the 90s with the Batman, the Superman, the Justice League, JLU, Batman Beyond, and Marvel had some Filmation ones that were pretty shitty, and they had the X-Men, and they had the long-running Spider-Man, and they had a couple X-Men cartoons after that, but not as memorable as DC's, you know what I mean?
Right, but one thing that Marvel has had over DC and definitely over Disney the past couple of years for their, I guess, most recognizable characters is that they've had the movies.
Yes, they have had the movies.
Which definitely puts it out there. However, looking at Disney, and even looking at more at DC with Superman and stuff like that, is that they still have the ability to get themselves out there and possibly reinvent themselves, probably a little bit better than Marvel does right now. And Marvel is joining the Disney stable pretty soon, so that they'll be a part of that that ability to get themselves out there and maybe branch themselves out to both older and younger people. But
now, are you talking like movies?
I'm talking movies, and I'm talking animation, and I'm talking comic books right now.
As far as the publishing side was, when that all happened, and this may change, but it all sounded like the reports from Marvel were saying, we're doing business as usual, nothing will change.
Yeah, but I don't believe it.
Which doesn't seem like a good business move for Marvel.
No, I don't think it does either, because
I'm sure everyone was just asking about that because they're afraid of making sure that nobody ever smokes a Marvel comic ever again, or they get rid of the Max line or something like that.
What about the fact that that Disney's putting out a Mickey Mouse video game that's very edgy for the Wii? Yeah. You know, that they're definitely trying to branch themselves out and not just be for the kiddies. And I think Marvel would need to do that, not just be an adult brand, but for children as well. Other than Superhero Squad, which, you know, I guess is sort of filling that niche to a certain extent, in order to actually be considered the most iconic comic book company out there. DC has been doing a pretty good job of having a little bit of A and a little bit of B over the past couple of years, and now they seem to be going more towards the...
I don't see how they're going to pull off a Superman revamp if, in terms of mainstream media, like movies, mm-hmm. when they're... franchise is in the toilet until, like, what, 2013?
2013, yeah.
That's true,
yeah.
But a lot of that is legal hassle, and, I mean, you can blame that on anything. You can blame that on poor direction, you can blame that on the legal problems that they're having with a lot of their characters, and, you know, it's sure to be coming
regardless of what you blame it, the character will not have a presence in the movies, and did not have a very strong presence with the last movie. Yeah. Superman... as far as movies go, is dead in the water for like,
but as far as merchandising and branding, Superman is still alive, though.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
So you walk around and you see Superman t-shirts and tattoos, and it's like, I'm sure that guy doesn't read what's going on now. He doesn't know what's going on now. You know, they're just fans of the symbol or whatever it means to them. Mm-hmm. It's not that the character, you know, connects with them on a personal level like we're talking about with hardcore comic fans.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, though. Is it the symbol that makes the icon, or is it the character that makes the icon?
Well, it's all part of it. I mean, that's why I say I think Superman in the superhero genre has to get the nod, because, again, the term superhero exists largely because of Superman. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, it gets back to he's quite literally the template for the archetypal superhero, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the... Yep. So, I mean, and he always will be, but again, that's also a historical concept. So, I think the issue we always... I know it's a common debate among geeks is the Marvel versus DC thing, and something we often get into probably more than even we want to. but I think part of the reason is, again, you know, Vince touched on it, you know, the DC characters, they're iconic ones, Batman and Superman and those guys, they have this reputation often. You hear people say, well, DC characters are not as street level, not as grounded. They're more, you know, fantastical, if you will. And I think, again, though, that speaks to a generational thing. They were created at a different time. And, you know, you're always wrestling with that notion of trying to protect the roots of a character and making it interesting to the current generation. And I think that's probably, at the simplest point, why Marvel's in a better position currently than DC, because their characters, as kludgy as, you know, if you go back and read the dialogue of Avengers number one or FF number one or, you know, Amazing Fantasy 50, I mean, it's kludgy, campy dialogue too, no question. But, you know, the reputation of these characters being more street level, being more human, I think has carried Marvel's stead really well into today, where for better or for worse, the majority of comic readers are more mature and want a more mature book. I think DC's characters have struggled with that transition a bit because so many of their fans don't identify them that way. And I think it's certainly something they can get past, but I think that's probably why Marvel's comic book universe is more successful now than DC's comic book universe. But broadly as a brand, I don't think there's any bigger brand than Superman, and I'd have to say Batman's right behind it. I mean, is there anything more iconic than the Batman symbol? I mean, I can't think of any Marvel symbol that's as iconic as that.
No, I mean, Spider-Man has his outfit. He doesn't really have a symbol to go
along
with.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a symbol. Yeah, I think Batman and Superman are the two most iconic symbols in comics. Mm-hmm.
But see, if we're going to go iconic and pinpoint the comics, mm-hmm. and that's what it seems like we're doing, I got to agree with you. Subjectively, I would say Spider-Man over Superman, but that's just my opinion, mm-hmm. which is based on nothing but the way I feel. But when you look at the cultural impact of the characters, yeah, Superman and Batman, which leads me to what I said on our show, and I got friggin' hammered on the forums for it, that DC has two heavy hitters, two iconic characters that pretty much universally will be recognized, and that's Superman and Batman, and then everything else is second string. Because you have Wonder Woman, the Justice League, whatever, you ask Mr. Public, the moviegoer, the average citizen who watches television and works 9 to 5, those people who don't read comic books, they will be able to, probably 99.9% of the time, Superman and Batman, oh yeah, very familiar with those characters. Everything else, they're going to be like, maybe you can tap 50% with Wonder Woman, but I understand that they are trying to transform that with the Green Lantern movie,
yeah.
and other things. But as it is now, I think that's where Marvel has to jump on DC, because you know, Iron Man, Fantastic Four, Punisher, for lack of whatever, has penetrated a certain amount. It's just that Marvel seems to have been luckier with their films than DC, so they have that segment of the population that only knows the movies. They still publish comic books? Really? I didn't know that, you know? So with that segment, yeah, Marvel has the jump, but with comic fans, Jesus, who the hell can say?
Right.
Well, you know? I think, to be fair, as I recall that conversation and the flack you got, it was more in the context of you were saying that DC's movies were going to have a hard time catching up to Marvel's because of that issue. The counterpoint to that, I think, is that I agree with what you're saying, Vince, about, you know, DC would contend they have a trinity. I think they really have a duo. I agree with you there. But I also think that, again, if you were to line up Marvel's iconic characters and talk about people in the street, Iron Man would not have been, I mean, I don't know if 10% of America would have been. So my point
that's
is
the magic
that,
of that movie. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. The fact that Marvel is able to make a blockbuster franchise out of a character like Iron Man, which surprised everybody, I think that's where you could say there's no reason DC can't have that kind of success with the right characters, the right movie, the right film, with a character like a Green Lantern or a Flash. It's just they have to do it, obviously. I mean, the onus is on them to do it. I don't see why, though, that their Green Lantern movie can't be as kick-ass a franchise.
Do the same thing, right?
Oh, yeah. But like you were saying, they have to do it, though. I mean, the onus is on them to deliver, which I don't, you know, they have the resources. Well, they just need to go ahead and do it.
I think it was pretty telling this past couple of, not this past couple of months, but specifically this past month, that there were so many Blackest Night titles in the top 10 for comic books. And mm-hmm.
In the Diamond Era, it's been mm-hmm. I think it's been at least 15 years since DC had all the top six in a month. So yeah, I mean they're doing great with it, and it coincides with the time when Marvel is in between events. Don't you know? Make no mistake. But absolutely.
Green isn't an event. Ask David; he'll tell you it's not an event.
Right? Exactly.
It's sort of an event, but that's just me. Right. But you know, I would
say that if it's got a banner, it's some sort of event.
I would agree.
Yeah,
I would agree with you. Yeah, definitely.
Lost moments in comic timing history.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Sean.
Hey, you guys didn't tell me Ian was coming.
Oh, the heck!
Well, fine. I'll just leave.
This is a raging bullet. Are we going to be on for the next 8 hours? I mean, this is a Raging Bullets episode, isn't it?
No. This is a comic timing episode.
This is comic timing. And also, it's going
to
be 3 hours.
It's okay if we're on for 8 hours. I don't have to go to school till 11:45 tomorrow.
Jim, don't worry. This won't take that long because I'm running on about 3 hours sleep.
So am I.
So Sean, are we going to record for 3 hours, of which two will be on the episode, and another hour will be the added extra stuff that he puts back in the crib?
Oh, no, you have to ask Ian on that. I don't edit this.
It's the hour of the tag.
Come on, Ian.
Jim, you can tell the really good Vegas stories because we don't care about our young listeners.
Hey, Jim was the one censoring his stories.
I know.
I'm actually the one that said to put him on.
He can have a tell-all on Comic Timing.
Well, he did tell-all.
Yeah, I told all the good stuff.
We're all. I felt like you were holding back.
No.
Okay, cool. That'll work. Right now I'm just looking to find where the hell I left the voicemail. So
don't forget to periodically hit, stop and make sure it's recorded. It's saved.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about that with the one that I'm currently using. So we're actually okay.
Happen on the Marvel one or something?
No.
The election one I was on.
Yeah. You were on it too, Brent.
I was?
The original one, yeah.
Don't worry, Brent. You were asleep. Nobody paid attention.
Probably.
Yeah. I left work yesterday at 3 in the morning.
Wow.
Playtesting's a bitch.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Those damn Pokemon.
Well,
did I get out of the cages again?
Wait a minute.
I'm not fondling Pikachu. Don't worry.
I didn't think you were. I thought Pikachu was... Well, never mind.
Was he fondling you? You're into the electric shock stuff?
I'm so glad that we're already degenerating into debauchery.
Yeah, I'd say Pikachu definitely is a top.
but you know what? Squirtle, despite the name Squirtle, is a bottom.
and we all know what Bulbasaur is.
What?
He's the bulb, man.
But you know what? With those vines, I bet he gets a hell of a reach around.
Oh. All right, forget it. We're not recording.
This is on a level of depravity that even I'm uncomfortable with now.
You got to feel them all.
I would love to do the outtakes of this conversation. Wait, I want to see what happens when these Pokemon hit one of those gyms.
Yeah, right, Jim? That's it. Your official nickname now. Forget Sensei or the whatnot. It's Pokemon Jim.
Oh, no.
But yeah, and all those Blackest Night books are, at least in one way or another, tied into Green Lantern. So this is definitely a good way for DC to be going right now, where if you want Green Lantern to be your next successful film franchise, make him your most successful comic book character.
I have to say one thing. I don't know how many of you guys... I know Brent just opened his box before we started recording, so he probably hasn't. I know Vince has already seen previews. I don't know if you've seen it, Ian, but I was unbelievably tickled to read through previews today and see that in the Marvel previews there is a... What is it? 6 pages dedicated to Iron Man trades that they're putting out. And it was all it was geared toward the retailers. Obviously, previews is written for the retailers, and it said, "Hey, Iron Man 2 is coming out. Here are a treasure trove of new and existing collected editions that you can put on your shelves to promote the movie and tie it in with it." And how long have we been begging for these guys to take synergies? And I just think both companies should do that with reckless abandon. And I loved seeing that because they didn't do it for. I mean, yes, they launched the Fraction Iron Man. Ongoing roughly around when the movie came out. So that was smart. But it really still didn't tie much into the movie, at least from a marketing standpoint. So to see them actually saying, "Hey, retailers, fill your shelves with these books because because they're going to be on their shelves at the same time the movie's hitting the big screen, and you'll be..." That just warmed my heart. And I hope we see much
more. Did you read Iron Man 20?
No, it's sitting next to me right now. I haven't gotten to it yet.
There's a reading order for new readers on the last couple of pages.
Very cool.
Oh, okay, cool.
Very nice.
Well, I just got in my box, they put out the Son of Marvel reading chronology for everything.
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
This would be handy.
And it's free. Here, take one.
Yay.
Right.
But just a little brief aside, if you look in the new previews, there's a major spoiler, a visual spoiler for the Iron Man movie.
Okay.
They took great pains to black out the armor for War Machine on the preview of the toy, but they showed his little head.
Yeah.
But if you look in the magazine section at the Tomarts Action Figure Monthly or whatever the name of it is, it's not blacked out.
Oh,
there is an Iron Man costume that is not the red and yellow, and it's just fully displayed.
Well,
boom.
Well, they did just release yesterday the poster for Iron Man.
We're able to catch the San Diego footage you saw.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not War Machine though. This is another Stark armor.
As we're talking about this, I'm thinking about, you know, one of the things we're having trouble is pinning down what it means to be iconic. I'm wondering, too, if that kind of has changed with the times, right? Because we have a point now where Marvel Entertainment and getting bought up by Disney. You have a point as you know, DC has now changed its name to DC Entertainment, and they've brought in two new suits to obviously integrate the brand. And it's all about, you know, these companies don't call themselves comic companies anymore. They're entertainment companies. They view the characters as brands, as intellectual property. So, I mean, are we really at a time where we're really seeing what even the term iconic means is changing when it comes to superheroes? I mean,
no, you might be right. You might be right there.
For the worse, in our views, because, I mean, we just want to have good stories with these characters that we love. But
yeah.
Well, I was going to say, look at Jason reining it in. Getting us back on track.
Right. I know. Well, I was just thinking, because, I mean, how important is it to you guys? Like, how important is the way you view a character when you first experience them? Do you view that as part of their iconic image, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big issue with a lot of people. Like, I mean, obviously, Vince and I were talking before we recorded about Punisher 11 and how what a treat I thought it was. But I could totally understand if your Punisher, Frank Castle, is one of your favorite characters of all time, that this might totally not be up your alley because of what they've done to him. And I've certainly had characters where I've despised what they've done to them mm-hmm. at times and thought this isn't my version of the character, and that wrecks my image of the character, at least until they kind of put it back in its place. So I know Vince is answering this because we've had debates about it, but what do you guys think? I mean, is your sort of snapshot in your mind of what that character is supposed to be like all part of its iconic brand, or is it, you know, or can you kind of look past that and be willing to accept that the character is going to change over time?
My idea of a character can change a lot depending on where they are in the universe, and I feel that specifically with probably the best example I can give is Nova, okay? Because when I first started reading Marvel Comics, I would have never considered Nova to be an icon of Marvel Comics because I thought he was a scrub, you know? Because when I was reading it, he was a new warrior. You saw him maybe once every, like, 4 issues, I mean, 4 months or whatever outside of the New Warriors book. You know, he wasn't anything important. And in today's Marvel Universe, he's the space god, basically. You know, I mean, all of the space odysseys that are going on in Marvel's universe right now revolve around Nova, and that's the icon status that I see for Nova. So if Nova were to continue down this road, I would be very happy. If all of a sudden he was a member of the New Warriors again, grounded on Earth, that wouldn't be my take on Nova, and that wouldn't be my iconic Nova. So I would definitely agree with you, Wood, that, you know, depending on what character trait I fall in love with, if that changes, mm-hmm. that can severely change the iconic status of a character for me.
Right. Again, it depends on your point of insertion, because to me, Nova was the Cosmic Spider-Man, mm-hmm. because I jumped into Nova when it started way back in, what, 78, 79, around there? Vince, I don't even know.
For the listeners out there who doesn't know, Vince is old.
I fart dust. But if you read the first series of Nova, it's essentially Richard Rider's Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Only he has souped up costume with, you know, space traveling capabilities. But, the supporting cast and the day-to-day problems that Richard Rider had were exactly like Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's awesome to see Nova the way he is now. Elevate the character to a position of like real importance in the Marvel U. That's great. But back then, Nova was no big doing. I mean, it was a good series, but it's much better now.
Mm-hmm. Brent, what were you going to say there?
I was going to ask Ian if his views on how they've on Kyle Rayner have changed recently.
Fuck you and die in a fire. I believe those would be my responses right now after mentioning.
I don't think you can really honestly get upset about that because you know it's not going to stick.
Yeah, I know. Right, especially since he's on the cover for like 2 issues down the road or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say based on what happened in Blackest Night #5, I would say it's pretty clear that there's a good chance it may not stick through the end of the Blackest Night. But another thing too. I guess it's hard to extricate the Marvel and DC. But another thing I think about as someone who spent most of his life being more of a Marvel zombie and is much newer to the DC universe. One of the big things definitely about these two universes is the concept of legacy heroes. And although lately there's been a little more – Marvel's been a little more willing to go down that route. Obviously, when you have a situation like DC does where so many of their characters, there's been – you know, there's four Earthbound Green Lanterns. There's mm-hmm. been, you know, plus the plenty of others. There's, as we're seeing with Flash Rebirth, there's tons of speedsters, and certainly, you know, there's three Flashes right now. There's a Kid Flash. There's a new Batman now. You know, there's always been this notion that the cowl or the name or the mantle of that heroic position is something that can be passed on. And in other words, like, it's not the man, it's the suit, right? I mean, that's kind of like it's implied that it's about the legacy of the suit and what it means versus the who's in the suit, which is, for Marvel, that's largely never been the case. I mean, you know, person is who he is. Now, again, we've seen a little bit of that change of late. But for the most part, Marvel's been the hero is the hero, you know, and they're really isn't a generational thing. And I think that plays into, you know, how people view it in terms of what's iconic and what's not.
Right.
But, I mean, from a publishing standpoint, legacy heroes are dangerous because in order for those heroes to have to resonate with the readership, there has to be some kind of longevity there. You have to have readers that are aware that this was the original, this is the new one, and that's demanding a lot out of your audience. Whereas Marvel, I mean, there was only one Spider-Man. That's all you had to know. Now there's like how many Green Lanterns and the Batman. I mean, it's demanding something from your readers that it's an investment, you know. And I think from a publishing standpoint, that was the thing that really hampered DC for a long time because they had such a freaking history that a new reader could come in and be like totally confused as to the history. But we caught up quick back then, but I mean, I don't think the readers of today are willing to do that.
Well, if
they can be spoon fed, here's an omnibus, get caught up, they will.
Well,
but if they're not shown, you know, what to do, it's where, I mean, how do you know? Wikipedia? Really?
Maybe, but that's one of the reasons that when DC reintroduced Barry Allen, I was scratching my head because you've got a character in Wally West that has been the Flash for a long time now, you know, and it's 30 years has been in the cartoons, you know, has been, you know, there's toys of him all over the place, and you've got this backstory for him all up there. What did Barry Allen had? He had a one season TV show, and
with a rubber costume,
right? With a rubber costume, and he's been dead since Crisis on Infinite Earths, and you bring him back, and you expect new readers to know the history of the Flash all of a sudden, and that's not what you're doing. I mean, mind you, Flash Rebirth has been better than I thought it was going to be, and the past couple of issues have sold me on it a little bit more than the first couple. Let's put it that way, okay?
He's like, for real?
Yeah, I know.
Really?
I wasn't expecting.
I haven't read 5 yet, but for real?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting anything. Let's put it that way. I wasn't expecting anything, and I'm a little bit happier than what I was expecting.
Well,
okay?
It's a good thing you didn't expect anything because I expected stuff.
That speaks to your generational issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What you're saying about the how it's tricky to have legacy heroes, I think it cuts both ways. Because let's be honest, I mean, when Jack and Stan were sitting around creating the Marvel Universe, or when, you know, the guys, when Bob Kane and those guys were doing, you know, when all these characters were being created at the time, I don't think any of them had any notion that these were going to be characters that were going to be written and have thousands of stories told about them, you know, 50, 60 years later, right? I mean, that wasn't on their minds at the time. It was, we need to put a book out that's going to sell now and entertain people. Mm-hmm. And I think that because of the evolution of these characters, they are in tough spots, right? I mean, like, the things we get angry about as fans, you really, if you take a step back, like, can you really blame them? I mean, as much as I hated the way they did the Spider-Man reboot, and I thought it was a Bush League way to do it, I can't objectively say that the logic behind doing it wasn't valid, which is that, look, I mean, Peter Parker is not, you know, we're not going to make Peter, no one wants to read a book where Peter Parker is a 40-year-old man married with 5 kids and, you know, is middle-aged.
Spider-Girl will prove that.
right. His character is, you know, a young, high school slash college age guy who's dates and is, you know, kind of a, not really established in his life yet. The only thing he really does well is be a superhero, and you know, that's all part of who he is. And so if you're gonna keep him in that mode, you have one of two choices. You can either do like a soap opera thing, which like DC does, where they keep Batman 35 throughout life, but then Robin grows to, you know, but then he has to go through a bunch of different Robins who become basically his equals over time. Or, you know, or you do what Marvel did, and they basically have to reset every generation, where you kind of reboot and say, okay, he's back to being young, and you piss a generation off, and some of them get over it and start reading it again. Other people say, well, I'm done reading, you know, the book, and it's not my guy anymore. So I think it cuts both ways. They're in a tough spot, right? I mean, like, if you don't bring in a new Flash, then you have to keep keep Barry young, all right? And it's like, even in Flash Rebirth, they have to, John's felt compelled in the last issue to explain why Iris looks hot again, you know, and why he should be 100 years old, but he's not. And yet, in the same book, they have the Golden Age Flash who's running around as a senior citizen, and they don't feel compelled to explain, well, then that means he must be 140 years old. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, it's, and I don't envy the writers for that. It's a tough spot because they have these characters. They have to keep, you know, they're not, unless that's Hellblazer, John Constantine, you have to keep them sort of in that age where they're still viral, you know, like vibrant, you know, in their physical peak people. But
no, that's a Max books I don't want
to
see.
Yeah, right?
Grandpa Flash Max.
Yeah, so.
You mean Spider-Man Reign?
Which was awesome.
Yes.
But again, I'm glad you brought that up, Jason, because the legacy thing, I know, the legacy thing kind of cuts both ways. It's hard from a publishing standpoint to attract new readers when they're expected to remember this whole bushel of history, but it deepens the complexity of your characters and your universe. It enriches the experience. So you have, what do we do? Do we pander to new readers, or do we keep this thing artistically sound and flesh out this entire universe as a living kind of narrative? What do you do? It's hard. Like you said, I wouldn't want to be in their position. It's like the Ben Reilly backlash. Remember that? Oh, my God.
Sure.
There were people who were dropping Spider-Man in droves back then. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
And now here we are, and it's funny to see that after the backlash of Ben Reilly, he's being brought up again.
He's awesome.
Yes,
he's great.
I agree with that. I agree with that, man. Yeah. I mean, I started Spider-Man with the Clone Saga. I'm one of the three.
Yeah.
You know?
And you're better for it, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Because I've seen Spider-Man in so many different situations where, you know, he's gone from having, you know, 17 clones, one of which named Spider-Side, to being no longer married and you know, trying to live his life like he's a swinging college kid again. But you know, at least I know that the history is still there for some of us, because for Ben Reilly being brought up again and retelling the Clone Saga the way it should have been told, quote unquote. I hate the American Idol references and the cultural references, but that's my own pet peeve. But at least they're bringing it up again. At least they're letting me know that the comics I read still existed one way or another.
Yeah. Here's a question, and it has pretty much nothing to do with the concept of the iconic character. But how about what do you think? Marriage in terms of fictional characters, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because in my opinion, that's what killed Amazing Spider-Man. For me, that's kind of what killed the Superman books, too, is when Lois and Clark got married.
It depends on the character.
You're clearly, I mean, I don't know if you probably know this, Vince, but that's where Mark Waid feels the exact same way. He's been very outspoken.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Waid has been very outspoken that he thinks that Superman was ruined by marrying Lois, because when you have to have him married to someone, it inevitably gives him a weakness that he always has to, you know, and it becomes a writing trope where they can always just put Lois in danger. And he made the same point about Spider-Man. And I kind of take the opposite tact in that I think the one thing I've learned as I've gotten older is that any situation with these characters can be good if it's done well by a good writer. I mean, again, you know, the idea of bringing Bucky back and turning him into Captain America would have been absolutely absurd to me if you told me it was going to happen. I would have been like, Brubaker, sacrilege. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
But he not only did it, but he did it so well that it's consistently been one of the best books that Marvel's put out. And am I going to be fine if Steve ends up becoming Captain America again? Absolutely. It's been long enough, and he's told a great story, and I wouldn't feel like it's being shoehorned back in because they have to. I don't think that's a requisite at all. Yes, you could be jaded and say, well, they're putting out a movie and Steve. That may all be true, but again, I don't think it's affected the story one way or the other. Right. It's been good storytelling. But to your point, I think it's a tricky thing because I can't – when I heard Quesada explain the Mary Jane thing, I love Spider-Man being married to Mary Jane because I love Mary Jane as a character. But I can't in good conscience say that I don't understand how that does change the character and make it complex. And again, to me, it gets back to the storytelling. My issue wasn't so much – I thought that the reason for rebooting Spider-Man was sound and that Spider-Man for a long time had gotten into this position where pretty much every story was about either Aunt May or Mary Jane being in danger and Peter having to make these decisions to protect them in some way. But again, that was a storytelling trope by the writers who felt compelled to tell those stories. I would say having now read the Brand New Day stuff, the first four trades, right, not one of those stories – couldn't have been told with the same kind of energy and vibrance if he had stayed married Mary Jane. The difference is they just needed to make the stories more upbeat and energetic and one-off. That's the only real difference.
No. One of the vital elements of both Superman and Spider-Man back in the day, and I know you can throw up the image of the baby crying with the wow, why do things have to change underneath it? No.
Wow. Right.
What was the tension?
Uh-huh.
Sexual tension between Peter and Gwen and Mary Jane and Betty and Gloria and just everyone around him, and then Superman. That tension between Lois and Clark, and there was the possibility, who's Superman going to end up with? This is cool. I like being teased. Once they shoehorn Superman into a marriage, if you have problems in a open relationship where there's no wedding vows, that's normal. You have problems with two people who are married, you need counseling. Counseling is not fun. It took part of that heartbeat away from the book. Both of them. Mary Jane, she's awesome, but if Peter gets a chance to tap Felicia...
Right. I think you have... that's what I say. I see both sides of it, because I do agree that if you view... part of what made those books special when you were first reading them is the relationship dynamics there and that romance aspect. Yeah, you're right. Then that does change things. I guess my thing, though, is I think you'd have to change the storytelling, but you could still tell good stories. And I point to our boy Morrison with All-Star Superman. I mean, at the core of that book is his love for Lois that goes beyond what him just kind of dating her would mean, right?
Yeah.
Or even, Final Crisis, which the Beyond Superman, mini that went with it. I mean, obviously there it's all about Clark's love for Lois, and that's really at the heart of why he does what he does in that book. So I think it can be done, but I see your point that it's a cleaner slate. You have more options to tell a story as a writer if they're not encumbered, obviously. I mean, that's a given. If all kidding aside, you're married, you have – you're responsible for not just yourself, but for another person. That's part of being married. I mean, it changes. I don't disagree with you.
I think the only book where the wedding situation works flawlessly for me, and it's because it was built into the book from issue one.
Fantastic.
I mean, if there was anybody who had any kind of question that Reed and Sue would get married, they just weren't paying attention.
Right.
Well, so, and that's the family aspect of the team. That's fine. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
In other books, it just—I don't know—it kind of waters stuff down. It takes a little bit of vitality away from me.
It definitely depends on the character, because I am perfectly fine with Wally West being married to Linda. I think that's probably one of the most real relationships in comic books that I've been reading, for years now, and I'm thrilled with it. You know, they're a great couple. Right. I'm still not entirely sold on the kids scenario, but I do like the fact that they're married. That makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
When Kyle Rayner was dating Jade, I thought that was great. You know, because I miss Jade too. Trust me. I mean, wow, hot. that was great because that was even multi-generational there. You know, you had the daughter of the first Green Lantern dating the current Green Lantern. You know, that was great to me. And damn you, Ben Robb, for just throwing it out the window. But that's another story for another time. you know, really, it definitely depends on who's writing it and which character it is. Because if they're a character that you think their story isn't really about them chasing relationships, then I'm perfectly fine with them with seeing them married. Because Wally West has never been about relationships. Wally West has always been about the Flash legacy.
Well, I think what Vince is getting at too is I think is again the notion of what's your expectation for the character. I think when I think of Animal Man and I think of Buddy, well, obviously I think of him as married because that's, you know, to me the seminal Animal Man. He was married, and that was a big part of that book. And I wouldn't want to see him not married. You know, by the same
token. My answer then. There's two wedding situations at work.
Ah, there you go. Nice. But I agree. There's it depends on how you first see the character because, you know, it's like the whole Gwen Stacy Mary Jane thing. I mean, you know, again, that's a generational thing. There are people that swear Gwen is, you know, Peter's true love and they should have never killed her off and it was a weak thing. And then you have people saying, well, no, Mary Jane's better. She's hotter. And I thought it was great. CGS had Jerry Conway on a month or so ago and I had never heard the story, but Jerry Conway, it just shows you sometimes how we forget that. For the writers of this stuff, a lot of times it was actually just about writing a story. It wasn't like some grander message they were trying to say. I mean, for Jerry Conway, he said he never liked Gwen as a character, and that's why he killed her off, because Gwen was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, she was a comic book version of Stan Lee's love of his life, who he married. And Jerry Conway said he wasn't, for him, his dream girl was not a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white girl. It was a, you know, raven-haired, sexy, sultry girl with attitude. And so that's what he wanted Peter to be with. And it just became, I'm going to kill off the girl that Stan's in love with because I don't love her, and I'm going to give Peter a girl that I would be in love with. And, you know, that's as simple as that. Like, it wasn't some, like, what the characters are on paper. Like, what defines them is largely what your first exposure with them and what the writer defines them as, right? I mean, that's you know, Peter Parker, when he was married to Mary Jane, it worked if the writer felt confident in telling those stories. It just seems like, for better or for worse, Quesada is of a certain age, and he said, you know, this isn't my Spider-Man, and if I'm going to be captain of the ship and I have to steward it, then I want the writers to tell a story where Spider-Man is the way I want him to be. And, hey, it's worked so far. I mean, it's been damn good stories. Again, I would contend I don't know that it's because he's not married to MJ, but I can't argue for sure that because he's not married to her anymore, so...
You well, it's a good thing that Judd Winnick has never written Spider-Man, or else he'd be dating Harry at this point.
Well, Peter would have AIDS. I don't know. What
Oh, it had to be said. Well,
they supplanted the relationship tension with the fact that Mary Jane knows, and he doesn't know that she knows, or he doesn't know. So there's that tension again whenever they're together. So they took one kind of tension and just supplanted it with another one.
Yeah. Well, Brent, what do you think of the whole relationship thing? I mean, does that make somewhat a character less iconic to you if they've got baggage?
No, I don't think so. I'm kind of agreeing with Wood about what he said about what it is when you first see a character. When I first got exposed to Spider-Man, he's in the cartoon wheeling and dealing and single and whatever, and then in the comics he was married. So it's kind of like, okay, whatever, it doesn't matter. To me, it doesn't matter. Superman... You know, and he's always been with the same girl, so whether he's married or not, for me, doesn't bother me at all. So I just think it just depends on when you're exposed to it. Because Gwen Stacy, for me, does not relate at all. I could care less whether she was in the third movie or not.
Right.
And it was kind of funny that the blonde was playing the redhead and the redhead was playing the blonde, but whatever.
And that neither of them were hot.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, Ron Howard's daughter is kind of hot in the blonde, but...
I like her better as a redhead.
Kirsten Dunst has lost her appeal. I will agree with you.
Oh, eat a bagel.
Lost her appeal since the first rain scene.
Oh, a little man. Something. Yeah.
She's kind of lost the battle with gravity, too.
Ouch.
And you would think she could afford a dentist, too, with all that money she made.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Put a bra on, will you? Jeez. And that's coming from me. Put a bra on.
I know, right?
You know? So
real.
All right.
Oh, real.
Lost moments in comic timing history.
And I'm still getting used to the new setup of Skype.
Tell me about it. Same here.
Hello.
Hey, Adam.
This is me.
It's Ian.
Hi, Ian.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Just sitting here waiting for you guys to call.
Well, good. We got John Mayo on the line as well.
Oh, awesome.
And how you doing, Adam?
Oh, pretty good. John, yourself?
Been better, been worse.
I hear you.
I think in the current world, the way it is today, I think it's good to be right smack dab in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't say I was in the middle.
And we're going to be joined by Chris Johnson in another minute or two. He's grabbing his microphone, so he's going to fill in for Brent tonight as Brent is off doing his own thing, his own college world thing.
So it's just about finals time.
Yeah, and he tells me this via text, mind you. Like, I'm waiting for him to show up, and he's like, oh, yeah, I forgot to get back to you. I got something else doing tonight. I'm like, well, great. I'm glad to see that you're up for it.
Well.
All right.
Adam, I got a quick question for you that you might be able to answer because I can't. Was talking to a guy recently, and he had read something like 17, 18 years ago that was about a half-man, half-wolf kind of a guy that wasn't Wolverine. Any ideas?
I was just thinking, there was a Mad Dog miniseries that Marvel put out. It was a tie-in to the Bob Newhart sitcom where Bob was...
I remember that. That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, there was a Werewolf by Night feature running in Marvel Comics Presents for a little while back in the early 90s. That could have been it, too, I guess.
I suggested that one, but he didn't think it was that. The only other thing I can think of is Timberwolf had a 5-issue miniseries around that time, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yep, well, that's one of the first things I said, but I guess...
Didn't hear that one, sorry.
Cutting in and out, yeah.
Right, cool. All right, so we're all good here. We all have a basic idea of what's going on. It's pretty much just going to be a primer, you know, because I got a comment on my last episode that I put out about, you know, like a guy was talking about how, you know, he enjoys the show and everything, but half the time he doesn't understand what the hell I'm talking about because he's first getting into comics now. And he's like, okay, so what's this? What's that? What's the difference between, you know, graphic novels and trades and you know, like, how do I pre-order and stuff like that? I know that when we get to the pre-order stuff, Adam, I know that that's not exactly your expertise.
Right.
But we'll certainly try and keep the conversation moving where you're not completely lost. So don't worry about it.
Yeah, and don't feel bad, Adam. There's a question on Crisis. You can take that one entirely.
All right. I stand at the ready.
Yeah, somebody was saying, you should probably explain the difference between pre-Crisis and after-Crisis. And I'm like, okay, I got the right person for that.
Brother.
All right.
That's a whole show in itself.
Yeah, tell me about it. Well, don't worry. This won't be a 4-hour show. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Let's steer it back on track a little bit. Let's look at the animated scene right now. Let's look at what DC's been doing and what Marvel's been doing. Marvel seems to have a tactic, at least mostly, that the animated series are for the kids and that the animated movies are for the kids, but adults can watch them. Well, meanwhile, DC seems to be taking a tact here where the animated series are definitely for the kids, but the movies are... It's almost strictly for the adults. They're all PG-13 now. They're all going for an older audience. Do you feel that this is a tactic that Marvel needs to be striking for as well? Or
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
I think you're wrong there. I think.
Okay.
I think just I disagree with a lot of the things you said. I think
Yeah, a lot. He usually disagrees with most of the things that I say. So that's fine. Go ahead.
But.
Happy 100, Brent. Come on.
Yeah. I'm having this breakdown. All right. Where was I? All right.
You were disagreeing
I disagree with Marvel's taking everything's for the kids. Mm-hmm. That's only been recently. I thought that the 90s Spider-Man and 90s X-Men, yeah, they were dumbed down a little bit, but there's a lot of melodrama going on that I think if... At any age, you can still watch those and enjoy them if you can sit through the mediocre animation. The stuff more recently, X-Men Evolution, I kind of agree with you there. It's for kids and Superhero Squad thing and the young Iron Man crap they got on. But the Wolverine in the X-Men cartoon is that's extremely adult at some places, I think. And then DC, I think the way that they've approached it in the last 10, 20 years, just they're for everybody. Mm-hmm. They're not aiming towards an audience. They're aiming towards it that everyone can enjoy it. And I think as they pushed Justice League on Cartoon Network at an 8 p.m. time slot, similar to, you know, the Star Wars Clone Wars cartoon now.
Right.
Which is excellent. And I think everybody underrates that thing. Thank you, Uncle BitTorrent, for letting me watch those. But that's a different thing. That 8 p.m. time slot just kind of cements what I was saying about DC, the DC cartoons, that they're just for everybody. as right. you know, just for anybody that can enjoy them. If you're sitting down at that time, no matter how old you are, and if you have any connection to these characters at all, or you're looking to form one, watch one of these things and you might get one. You know what I mean? And the way I see with the animated, the straight to DVD stuff, I think it just, you know, it just depends on the storyline. DC storylines are, you know, the ones that they have put out have tended to be a little more adult. There's certainly some more adult things in New Frontier that they could have cut out and made it, you know, rated G or whatever. Mm-hmm. But because that they're being so faithful to the story, they do not want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like the Wonder Woman one came, she comes from a world of ancient Greece and, you know, they kill people left and right without regard. So to, you know, have that spirit, they didn't cut that out.
Yeah. Glorious beheadings.
Right. And that surprised the hell out of me. I watched that thing. I was like, this is Wonder Woman? That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I just think that it just depends on the audience. And I think the idea that they're trying to make it for one audience or the other is wrong. They're trying to make their product more accessible to everyone, I think, is a smarter move. And then to have the pockets of the little kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, who's the money spenders? It's going to be the hardcore comic fans like us who are sitting here at 10:30 at night discussing these things. We're going to watch whatever they put on TV unless it's really too dumb for us to watch.
Hey, I don't know what you're talking about. It's 7:25.
Uh-huh.
That's
nice.
Yeah, I guess I see... I see both sides of it. I have to agree with Ian on the DC... straight to video, straight to DVD movies. Only because a few of them, I've made the mistake of letting my 4 and 6 year olds watch.
Whoa.
Before I watched them, and had to basically rush to fast forward or turn them off. And with the with the Superman Batman one that just came out, I thought, oh, how can that be bad, Superman Batman? And then I found out 2 days later when my wife calls me at work and says, why is Jackson screaming, shut the hell up? And I said, well, I don't know. And she's like, well, I'll tell you why, because he said Batman was saying it. And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, I think those movies definitely, almost to a fault, are not kid-friendly. And again, I mean, if you have a 13-year-old, yeah, that's fine. But for a dad of a 6-year-old...
storylines that were written for comic fans, which mostly are adults. Which is where they're serving the storylines, and if the storylines are more adult, then they're going to serve that side of it.
I guess I'll buy that. I mean, I guess I'll buy that. I mean, although I don't know that Hal Jordan's origin story was written specifically for adults, or that Crisis was written for adults. I mean, back in '84, this was still a market for teenagers and young men. But okay, I mean, I'll buy that. But I definitely think that Marvel. I mean, again, you know, when I think of my own kids, it's sort of a litmus test having 3 boys. I mean, one's a baby, so he doesn't get a vote. But you know, they live for these cartoons, and for them, nothing beats Brave and the Bold. And I guess the way I look at it is, will I get great joy out of sitting down and watching it with them? I think Brave and the Bold is one of those wonderful cartoons where absolutely 6 and 4 year olds adore it, but at the same point in time, I'm not insulted to be watching it. You know, it's entertaining to me too. There's a lot of really smart stuff, and it's just like you get back to like the Looney Tunes cartoons. There were always stuff in there for the parents that the kids didn't even notice, but it was just sort of a nod to them.
Right.
Whereas like a Wolverine, the X-Men, I think that's more straightforward superhero action. And you know, for whatever reason, my kids, they'll watch it, but they're not gaga about it. But Superhero Squad, they love Superhero Squad. It cracks them up. They laugh hysterically at it. Whereas for me, even though I'm a Marvel zombie, that's a little hard for me to stomach. I don't take great joy in sitting and watching Superhero Squad. I think it's a little too kiddy. So I think you got to take each one for what it is. I think each one is targeted at a different audience. I think the JLU and the Deanie Batman were obviously very mature, well produced cartoons, but I don't think that they were unfriendly to children, you know, so those were like much more, I think, all ages cartoons. I don't know if there's that many all ages cartoons right now.
Not really. No.
Yeah. Maybe Ben 10. I don't even know if that counts.
That kind of is, because my girlfriend and I are waiting to actually marathon that whole thing, because it looks pretty interesting.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Vinny B, come on.
I don't know. It's tough for me with the cartoons, because my kids are all over the spectrum, and I have two girls and one boy, and like Jason, I made the mistake of thinking, oh, Wolverine and the Hulk, this is cool, I'll put it on. And, I mean, that thing is pretty violent for a cartoon. The one that went right straight to DVD.
Yeah.
The Thor, not so much, but the Wolverine and the Hulk, I mean, and my middle daughter's like, I don't think I want to watch this. So, you know. And it, for a kid not to want to watch a cartoon, but again, Ben 10 is the leader in our house with all of them.
Yeah.
So, and then there's a kind of like
smart
a
boy little.
There's a rotating hierarchy. Like they love Brave and the Bold, but they also love Clone Wars. So depending on what mood they're in, you know, none of them.
Clone Wars is strong number two in our house. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to give it up to Lucas because that single-handedly. I don't want to say erased, but it lessened the bad taste of the prequels.
Well, I don't think that has anything to do with Lucas, other than
I mean character. Lucas as an entity, and his name's on it, so
right, okay, right,
you know, because those prequels are horrid, and the reaction they got was almost universal, and then this comes along, it's like, oh my god, this cartoon is great. I mean, I love it. My kids love it. And there have been times when my wife would. I mean, she has no interest in Star Wars. I mean, it's so visually appealing that she could sit down and say, "This is pretty cool," you know. But as far as the cartoons, it's hard to say. I don't know.
Well, you have any fans of Avatar: The Last Airbender in the household?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
yep.
Good. Good to know. Good to know.
Yep.
All right. Hopefully, the movies won't suck.
I'm hoping. Cartoons great.
Yep. Yes, movies, Brent. Movies.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. Directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah. So what's the surprise twist?
The surprise twist is that there is no surprise twist.
That it's actually going to be a good movie? Is that?
No, the surprise twist is that he cast Dev Patel as an Asian man.
Nice. Oh, okay.
That's basically it. Yeah, that Zuko is going to be played by Dev Patel. So they had to cast the entire Fire Nation as Indian.
Who's Dev Patel?
Dev Patel from Millionaire, Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see that.
Yeah, good movie.
I hear good things.
Good movie. Especially if you're a fan of Millionaire. All right. Well, I think at this point we've sort of gone the entire spectrum a little bit. So is there a clear cut winner or is it entirely up to interpretation on who the iconic character?
I don't know. I don't think you can unless you do like those goofy market analysis and those like the comic book equivalent of the Nielsen ratings. I don't see how you could ever gauge it. But again, just to reiterate what we were going on about before, I just think it's very subjective and it's very age specific.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Okay. And you know what? Yeah, this is probably the last question I'll throw out there. Are there any universes that people wouldn't normally suspect to be iconic that you yourself consider to be iconic? And I mean,
sure.
In the comic book universe specifically.
Sure. Two, Archie.
Okay.
I think it's gotten a little bit of publicity of late because of Archie 600 and all that stuff, but you know, it's Archie has had the great ability to be on, you know, the newsstands and sell really well there for the last 20 years when most comics had to go to the direct market, and I can't think of many kids even today that don't know if you say who's Archie or they know they think Archie, Jughead, Betty, Veronica. I mean, they know those characters. They may not frequently read them, but you know, every kid has had a moment where he's read an Archie comic or something. So that's one.
The cover price is lower than the big two.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other, and I don't. Again, this is a little bit out of the comics realm, but I definitely think it's hugely iconic, and it kind of speaks to this generation. The Nintendo characters, Mario.
Okay.
And those guys, I mean, Nintendo's built a $10 billion brand on Mario and his offshoots. And even now with Wii, I mean, you know, let's be honest, the only hot games on Wii are, you know, Mario offshoots, you know, Mario Kart and New Super Mario. I mean,
I mean,
their principal brand. I mean, and that's a huge brand that, I mean, you know, I talk about on like Donkey Kong. I mean, you know, I mean, think about that. You know, he was the, you know, he was the sort of the antagonist in a little Donkey Kong game back when, you know, Vince and I were playing coin operated video games when you two were in diapers. And now look at him. I mean, he's sort of like, you know, he's the forefront of, you know, one of the world's most successful, you know, gaming companies. So
hell yeah.
Don't forget there was Mario comics at one time. Jim Shooter's Valiant did Nintendo comics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That I think that's what they need to do.
You need to bind those, Vince.
Nintendo, I don't know, the kids read them. Nintendo needs to get on that bandwagon and try and do some printed material, some comics to tie in with these huge and hugely popular games and sell them in the electronics stores. Why not?
Yeah, worth a shot. But,
since we're talking about universes and comics, I think there's one that Jason forgot.
Oh, what's that got?
And I would argue that it's every bit as pervasive as the Marvel and DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
Simpsons.
Ooh.
Nice.
There you go. Nice. Yeah.
And they have the two-prong attack. They have a maybe not so popular as it used to be TV show, but they still have a television presence. Mm-hmm. They had a movie presence, one, and they still have a spot on the spinner racks. So
you're right.
Well, here's the one that well, you know what? Let me ask Brent first before I say anything. Brent, you got any?
No, I kind of disagree with the Simpsons, but whatever.
Well, why?
Wow.
Why?
How could you disagree with that?
You're allowed to disagree.
That maybe have something to do with I was never allowed to watch Simpsons in my house.
Wow.
Okay.
I did not grow up with the Simpsons.
Okay.
Just a parental choice, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I watch them now, and I don't get it. I just don't get it.
You don't get the appeal?
I prefer Family Guy. I don't get the appeal. It just seems really... I don't know.
You know, that reminds me of the time that Family Guy bit everything off of The Simpsons.
True. I mean,
just look at the impact of
Family
Guy
and South Park, man. I'm just not a Simpsons...
Yeah.
Imagio, I guess.
You don't need to be a fan of it yourself to appreciate that it's iconic, though.
I can appreciate that it's iconic and that their Universal ride is damn good, but I mean, as far as iconic characters and as far as comic books and stuff, I don't know. I'll just withhold my thoughts on that.
Did you ever hear anybody in your office or place of work?
The only people here talking about Bongo comics is you.
No. I'm saying
Bongo won an Eisner last year.
In the real world, did you ever hear anybody screw up at work and go, "Oh, you know, that's The Simpsons. Don't have a cow. That's The Simpsons."
Yep.
I mean, they've pervaded the cultural entity of our America. Like, I mean, way back when they were really hot, Simpsons were everywhere.
Groening's like, got about $800 million. It says that it's iconic.
Yeah.
I mean, they were our, sentence. Not our generation, but they were the last generation's Disney, I guess. You could say
that. I was sort of just on the cusp. I agree. I mean, I noticed, like, it's funny to hear you say that, Brendan, because I like, for me, I know that, like, got like Ian, how old are you, Ian?
I'm 25. 20.
So, I mean, I would think, like, people in their late 20s, that Simpsons was their thing.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I mean, there are plenty of kids that it's their thing, and they can spout Simpsons trivia and recite whole episodes and just, you know, that's their nerdy thing. In middle school, I remember three or four kids that were like that, but, you know.
It's all right, man. You're like me with the Brady Bunch. I never got the Brady Bunch. Never resonated.
No. It's just, I guess it was the whole, like, rudeness thing, and I don't know.
Well,
you have to ask my dad.
Mm-hmm. I have four letters for you, and
Wait, hold on.
What?
Dad, what was wrong with The Simpsons?
Oh.
It sucked.
Nice.
That's crazy talk.
That's the first time Brent's dad has wound up on an episode of Comic Timing. Good time for him to show up on episode 100. But I have four letters for you guys out there that was brought up on part one, and I'll have to bring it up here again. TMNT.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, sure.
Yep. I mean the Ninja Turtles. I mean the Ninja Turtles have been around in comic book form and in television form for. Yeah, and movies for more than 20
games.
And video games toys. And toys for more than 20 years now.
Underwear. Adult diapers. Marital aids. Yeah.
Wallpaper, you know.
Real dolls.
Whoa.
Oh, I didn't say that.
So ever seen Jason Lane, real doll? Ooh, that thing's hot.
See it, dude. Come to my house.
You dropped $6,000 on a real doll?
On a JC Lane, I would. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Wait,
that
in the
my
day.
Girl, dude.
Not now.
White wedding? Man. No, I'm talking about back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
New wave hookers?
Probably made of the same material, too. It's a real tasty one.
Yeah, these days.
Oh, man.
Good but, one, Ian.
Yeah, well I turtles. Mean, did you guys actually catch the Turtles Forever that aired a couple weeks ago?
Oh, that's out already?
Yeah, it aired on the CW on their Four Kids block. About I think it's going to be online with like 12 minutes of additional footage. So you'll be able to catch it there pretty soon, but it's
I'm going to have to call up Brent's friend Mr. BitTorrent and see if I can watch it.
Dude, it's Crisis on Infinite Turtles.
Oh, cool.
It's everybody involved. Like, you know, it's the 2003
Are Bebop and Rocksteady in it?
Bebop and Rocksteady are in it. Yeah, the Technodrome is in it, and of course.
What color is Baxter Stockman though?
Ooh, Baxter Stockman's not in it.
Oh.
One of the few characters that was not in it was Baxter Stockman. Yeah.
I guess probably because they couldn't decide what color to make him.
Probably, yeah. Probably. But both April O'Neils are in it. You know, the old version of the Turtles and the new
yellow
version.
Yellow jumpsuit April.
Yellow jumpsuit April is indeed in it. And most importantly, the black and white Turtles are in it.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Cool. So it's the first time we've ever actually seen animated black and white Mirage Turtles, so that's cool. That's good times. Right,
I'm gonna
there.
Have to, yeah,
yeah.
Uncle BitTorrent, hello.
Well, it'll be out on DVD eventually. They haven't actually set a release date for it, but it'll be out eventually. But yeah, Mr. Torrent is a good place to go.
I will buy it.
Right on, nice. Excellent. All right, well, that's pretty much it at this point here. So first off, Vince, thanks for coming back, man.
Yay. It was a pleasure. I had lots of fun.
Yeah, same
Even
here.
Even though I had to endure wood. Yes.
Two nights in a row, buddy.
I know. It's like torture. But yeah, it was fun.
And what were you drinking tonight, Vince? You said you were drinking a beer. Is that the...
I was drinking Yingling.
Yay!
Yes.
Putting on a Pepe Mac for the old school.
Yeah.
Pepe Mac.
I'm a creature of habit.
What can That's man. Funny because I'm drinking Pepe Mac tonight.
Oh.
Don't you love it? It doesn't make you feel like...
I'm not really drinking Pepe Mac. I'm drinking Diet Dr. P.
Well, what I'm going to be drinking tomorrow once I go to the store is I'm going to get me another bottle of that Wells Banana Bread beer that I found out here last time I was
we'll
out
take
here.
Take your ass to the stove with that.
Oh, man. Yo, I'm telling you, there's nothing quite like a beer where you open it up.
One of my favorite lines, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Does it actually smell like banana bread?
It smells like banana bread when you open it up.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Goes down smooth.
Tell you what, go get a hurricane.
Yeah?
About
1.5 of those and you'll be feeling no pain.
Holy
Vince,
crap.
Do you know what movie that's from, the line I just said?
I have no idea.
Boys in the Hood.
Oh, okay.
No, Boys in the Hood. Ice Cube is sitting in the back of his hoopty with Regina King. And Regina King is his girlfriend and she finishes up his 40. And she shows it's empty. She's like, 40's empty. He's like, bitch, better take your ass to the stove with that. She runs and gets him in the
classic
40.
Cinema. Classic.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, Wolfgang Puck ain't got nothing on that, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why I said it.
All right. Rattle.
Well, and where can we find you fine fellas every single week?
11 o'clock comics.
Yes.
.com if you want to go there. But
if bulletinspodcast.com.
No. Forum.com.
Forums.bulletinspodcast.com. Yeah.
There is a front page.
There is, yes.
I know, but David likes to pretend the front page doesn't exist.
Okay.
He does. Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Well,
I don't know why. He's ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Well,
listen, boys, happy 100. And,
thank you.
Brent, when's the big day? When is that? Have you set a date yet?
Working on it. Probably a year.
A year? Nice. Okay. Ian, God when's your big day?
My big day is whenever the hell I feel like it.
Oh, snap. So I'm guessing Jen doesn't listen to the show then?
You mean Chris? Yeah.
Or Chris. Sorry, Chris, yeah.
Or Jen, even, you know, if she's out there.
I meant Jen. I didn't mean Jen. Sorry.
Hi, Jen.
That's your gomad. I forgot. That's your gomad. Sorry.
my future sweetheart, Jen. If you're out there, hey baby. What's
She's
up?
On back stock.
Chris, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Right. Chris and I are fine in the situation that we're in. She's minding the home back in Brooklyn right now.
Nice respect.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, fellas. Well, it's been a pleasure, and hopefully, Vince, we'll see you in less than 90 episodes next time.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll hop on for your Super Show episode, Ian.
Dude, hell yeah. Hell yeah. From the room.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
From the room, plenty of booze. That's the way we roll.
Couple months, right?
Can't wait. Even if I'm still out here, I'm hitching the plane and I'm heading to the Super Show. Nothing's going to stop me from that, man.
All right, man.
It'll be a good time.
All right.
Be good, boys.
All right, everybody have a good night. And
you too.
We will see you for the next part of this episode, which will be airing in another 5 minutes. So.
Later, dudes.
Yeah.
All right, night, guys.
Cop out.
It's part two of part two, and apparently that's a cop out. Yeah, we're back here. We got the crew going here. Sean Pryor was going to be on, however, he's dealing with his own stuff right now, and hopefully everything's going all right for you there, Sean. And you know, we're thinking about you, and hopefully the family's okay. But Brent's still with us because he never leaves. But we're joined as well for this second part here by the Asian sensation, the Asian insane man, Mr. Raf Suhu. What's going on, Raf?
Hello, listeners of Comic Timing. Why are you doing that? Don't. Don't. It's 100 episodes, but still, don't.
Now you're stealing my shtick?
Cop out.
Ugh. All right. And returning to Comic Timing, she was on the San Diego Comic-Con wrap-up where she got to enjoy Brent's long rant about a $30 sketchbook. It's Ange.
It wasn't a rant. It was kind of a conversation.
Oh, it was a conversation. It was a conversational rant, Brent, okay? It was a little bit of both. Ange from Two People Talking. She's back. Hey, Ange.
Hi. Has Jamal Eichel been back on the show ever since?
He has not been back on the show. However, he's been on Raf's show, which is worse.
Well, actually, he told me on this. Actually, I'm not supposed to mention this because this was off the air and he didn't want it on the record, but he said he's never going to do Comic Timing again.
You're a liar.
I am a good liar, aren't I?
Yeah, well, we know who would blame for that.
Nah, come on. Jamal Eichel's one of the nicest guys in comic books. I'm sure
he's
understood.
A scholar and a gentleman.
Yes, he is. He is.
Yes,
he totally is.
Most awesome guy ever.
So the episode is still iconic characters here, and hopefully Brent will have more to say since he sort of shot his load in the last episode. That's what she said.
Come
yeah. On. Kaboom, boom. But yeah, we'll start it off with Mr. Suhu, because, you know, he has to talk eventually or else his brain will explode. So, Raf, who has the most iconic characters and why? And even better, what makes things iconic to you in the world of comic books?
All right. In terms of iconic characters, what I look for are characters that tie in largely into a greater mythology. Characters that have a long legacy. I wouldn't consider Invincible. You know what? No. Let me scratch that.
I was gonna say.
No. Scratch that. You know what? They don't have to necessarily have a long history, but they have to be an integral part of the publisher that publishes them.
Okay.
Let's go with that. I'll go with that.
That's fine.
Because I do consider Invincible iconic. I do sort of consider Spawn iconic. I mean, not that, but I don't keep them in the same. I don't have the same respect for them as I do, like, Superman, who's been around. Anyway, those three things. They also have to not be a flavor of the week sort of thing. So as much as I love Azrael, as much as I love Darkhawk, they're not iconic. Nova's not iconic.
Whoa. I don't know about Nova.
No. Okay. Let's think about it this way. 10 years ago, would you consider Nova iconic?
No, and we talked about that actually on the last part with Vince and Vincent Wood. But iconic status can change, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. No. I think every character has the potential to be iconic, but once they hit that moment, it can't just be a 15 minutes of fame. It has to remain steady throughout its history. Because I mean, Shang-Chi was really popular in the '70s. No one knows who he is now. When you think of Marvel Comics, do you think Spider-Man, Captain America, Thor? Do you think Shang-Chi, Darkhawk?
No.
And
no, you don't.
Exactly. This is my point. I love those characters. Every character I'm mentioning, I absolutely love, and I don't think it's fair. But let's face facts. It is what it is. So with all that said, with all those all those criteria, I think in terms of... I think Marvel has more iconic characters, but DC has... the most iconic characters.
Okay.
Meaning, I think I think in terms of Marvel, my iconic characters are Captain America, Wolverine, Spider-Man, Thor, Iron Man, Doctor Doom, the Fantastic Four. Yeah, let's leave it at that.
Did you say Hulk?
A Hulk. Nicolas Cage, Ghost Rider. The Punisher.
All right. We get the point. Yeah.
Stop here.
Like, I mean, that's like 10 characters already, and I consider them icons. Whereas with DC, I think Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Green Lantern, Flash, the Justice Society, Robin. If there was like a icon like level, if you could count like measure the level of iconity from 1 to 10, all the ones from Marvel are in the like 7 to 9 range, whereas Superman and Batman are 10s.
All right.
Like Superman and Batman are the most recognizable comic book characters,
and that puts them on top for you. That puts DC on top for you.
Yeah, because they may not be as prolific as Marvel, but the ones that are icons, everyone knows. Like I said, the tie to mythology, Batman. Batman is the ultimate like spirit of vengeance. His parents were killed in front of him. He wants vengeance. Superman just has so much history behind his character. Part of it links back to Hercules. Part of it links back to like being a savior, like the savior figure. Mm-hmm. There's so much you could break down in Superman in terms of being an icon. He's pure icon. He's not made of anything but icon.
Okay.
So, with that said, like I mean, like I said, it's not a slight against Marvel. It's just right. That when you think of superheroes, do you think of Captain America or you think of Superman? Everyone thinks Superman first.
Yeah. All right.
So that's my point. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Ange, roll it over to you. Do you have similar opinions or do you differ?
They're somewhat similar. I also think that it's somebody who's timeless. Somebody who, I guess, like whereas in fashion, it doesn't go out of style. You know, it's a character that, depending on your parents or other generations or past generations, you know, how many generations comic book reading has been for each or another, it's a character that people can agree with or who's, you know, that, say, if my father actually read comics at the time, then, you know, that he liked them. You know, it just goes on. And, I mean, I would like to add Wonder Woman to that when it comes to DC. I mean, you guys didn't mention Aquaman, right?
No, we didn't. But, see, Aquaman, I don't know if you'd really consider Aquaman to be an iconic character because he's always sort of been, like, lower, higher tier. You know what I mean? Like, even though he's been
B-team iconic?
Right. He's probably the highest up on the B-League that you can get, because he's been
this is where it's like, I didn't know that it was like with actors, where they had like an A-list and a B-list and a C-list kind of thing.
You never really thought of that?
I never really thought of it that way. I was like, ooh, it's like actors, you know?
Go ahead, Rev.
I mean, this is the whole point. This is a Justice League scene. Let's say there's a huge alien invasion. This is what happens. Batman's like, all right, Superman, you go take on Darkseid. I'll take out... the rest of us take on the Parademons. Aquaman, go get the fish. Don't save everyone else. Go. Get in the water. You can do it, Aquaman. And Aquaman's like...
You know what the funniest thing is? Like, people can like say how lame Aquaman is, but he's got...
No, he's awesome.
He's got like the most badass like arch nemesis in Black Manta.
Yeah. That's why Jeff Johns wants to do something big with Black Manta.
I'm looking forward to that when he mentioned that. Yes. I was just like, it's about time, because it's like, I remember watching cartoons of Black Manta. I remember watching Super Friends and seeing Black Manta. And then it's like when I started reading comics, it's like, okay, so where's Aquaman and where's Black Manta?
Well, you know, actually, that does sort of bring up a good point, and I'm gonna ask Brent this first here. Do you need good villains to make yourself iconic also? Because, to be an iconic hero, do you also need iconic villains, or can the villains be schlubs?
I think you also need good villains. Any good hero needs a good villain. Mm-hmm. Any good hero's only as strong as his villain, so I think it kind of goes with...
Okay, so you would definitely say that that guys like Superman and Batman are iconic not only for themselves but for their rogues gallery.
Oh, absolutely. Who has the most famous rogues gallery of them all?
Batman.
Okay, there you go. You answered your own question.
Yeah, but does that make him more iconic than Superman?
Okay, you can't really compare the two, because Superman's iconity, I'm going to use that word again, even though it's not a real word, is different from Batman's. Batman is trying to eradicate crime. That's what he is. He's going to forever be an agent of order. So everyone he fights has to be an agent of chaos, whereas Superman is the ultimate symbol of hope. He's the ultimate hero. He doesn't need a specific villain to fight. He just needs to beat them every single time. He needs to save the day every single time because that's what he is. I mean, if you think about it, some of his most powerful villains weren't originally his own, like Darkseid. And if you think about it, his villains are the best at what they do usually. Lex Luthor's the smartest man on the planet besides Batman. Doomsday is the strongest creature in the universe. Darkseid is a freaking god. I mean, Superman's his iconity is directly wrapped into just being able to prevent the apocalypse every single time. That's why he is an icon.
You're going to force that word iconity down our throats, aren't you?
Iconousness? Iconography? That's an actual word. That means something else.
Yeah, but I kind of like iconity. I kind of like it. I'm not going to use it. I just like it.
It's going to become My Parents Are Dead.
No, it's not. And wow, you just said it. You just said it. For the first time on a podcast, because it's episode 100, he brings out that My Parents Are Dead. Well done. Well played, sir. Well played.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Fucker.
What is this cop out stuff?
When you listen to 99.5, you'll understand.
Maybe I don't want to now.
I don't think you
maybe
do.
The listeners won't want to.
We'll have to find out. We'll have to find out, sir. We'll have to find out. We'll have to see if the numbers go down because it's a wrap episode. I don't know.
I will unsubscribe from my own podcast until I'll do my part.
See, it's going to be too late because everyone will have heard that and then moved on to 100, see?
I'll make a forum post. I'll post in the thing that recording tonight has so shamed me that I will be suspending my subscription until 100 is released.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
That's dedication. Frank Christina. The dedicated asshole.
The head.
Madonna.
The heavy shit comes out on the celebration episodes.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's throw in the heavy.
Let's celebrate the show by unsubscribing to my own podcast.
Next thing you know, he'll retire from his podcast.
Please.
Oh yeah. Wait. Before you continue, Ian, congratulations on episode 100. I hope it goes down in flames.
Too late.
you know, Raph.
You want to know shows?
The only other way that would have been better, Raph, is like, okay, look, I know you're doing episode 100, and I'm gonna let you finish. But Raging Bullets had the best episode 100 of all time.
It did. I swear to God, it did.
Four parts.
Four. More like 12, man. Gee.
I don't remember what it was. It was extraneous, that's for sure.
Ange, get us back on topic, please. Get us back on topic. I mean, how much do the villains factor into it?
This feels more like a regular episode than with Wood and
I know, right?
And Vince.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Please.
It's a great thing.
I think they, I wouldn't say compliment.
No, compliment's actually probably a good word.
Compliment them in a way, because I mean, when you think of Batman, you think of all the fights he's had with the Joker. When you think of Superman, you think of the battles he's had with Lex Luthor, with Wonder Woman. I mean, I think of the times she had with the Cheetah or with Giganta. I mean, you know, Aquaman and Black Manta. I can go on. I mean, with Invincible, I'm not really familiar with the Marvel character. Well, I mean, I think of, like, Fantastic Four and Doctor Doom. I mean, Spider-Man and Green Goblin, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Sinister Six, Venom, Carnage, Cardiac.
Not Cardiac.
Emo Goblin.
Emo Goblin?
Demo Goblin.
Oh, Demo. I thought you said Emo Goblin for a minute. I'm like...
I think that's in Spider-Man 4 when Harry comes back to life. And gets the black costume.
Emo Goblin versus Emo Spidey. Yeah, right. But no, so basically you can't have one without the other.
Right.
All right. Okay.
You know, no peanut. You can't have peanut butter and, you know, without chocolate. And.
But I like peanut
it's
butter.
It's peanut butter, jelly time, peanut butter. Okay, I'll stop there.
Now, where are you at? Where
and
you
ice
at?
Ice cream and cake, you know, I don't.
I'm just recording sometimes.
Only sometimes?
Only sometimes.
Only sometimes. Okay. All right.
I can't be this stupid on my own show. I have to. If we're talking 100 episodes, let's go behind the scenes of podcasting. Let's talk.
Comic Timing Podcast. We're fucking stupid.
Yes, we are.
Yes.
You obviously aren't if you've got 100 episodes under your belt. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not even the 100. That's what the whole cop-out thing came from, Brent. Technically, you know, doing a 99.5 was a cop-out because I didn't want a Wrath episode to be episode 100.
And yet I'm still here.
Yeah, what the hell's wrong with me? I mean, come on.
I don't know, Ian. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know, Susan. I don't know.
I know how to get on the table, John.
Oh God!
I'd be happy to do 100 episodes. Okay.
Anyway,
that's what she said.
And this is the last episode of Comic Timing. Just so everybody knows,
you know,
out there,
it's not to come out of Brent's mouth and not yours.
No, I half expect them to just storm off, and
I just expect Brent to just hang up the phone.
Don't. Please don't. Then you'll leave me with these two. I mean,
I don't think Brent can.
I think Brent fell asleep again.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Come on, coming on. All right, fine. Back on topic.
Oh, he did hang up.
Back on topic. All right.
He did hang up. Oh, shit. Sorry. I was just being facetious.
Holy crap. God fucking damn it. Okay, I'm calling him back.
Now.
I'm calling him back. Let's see what happens.
Yes.
Hi.
That is awesome.
Hi, buddy.
Hello.
How you doing, buddy?
Are you crying? I'm sorry.
Crying? Do you seriously think he gives that much of a shit?
I like to have the benefit of the doubt of people, that's all.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Lost moments in comic timing history!
Go to your home, slaughter your firstborn for me.
But I have no firstborn.
Slaughter your future firstborn for me.
But I
so
have
is
no
the last
future.
Episode so monotone that you can't edit it?
You know, it has to take so much motivation for me to actually edit an episode now, because I'm like, I'm sitting there, I'm watching TV, it's May, it's like this close to every single show I watch being over and done, so... Yeah, it's taken a while.
After next week, there's nothing good on TV.
Exactly why by then I'll probably have plenty of time to edit. But I'm gonna get the monotone episode out by tomorrow, hopefully. Hi, Chad.
Hello.
And how are you this fine evening?
Oh, my eyes are finally going back to normal after having been dilated this afternoon.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it's nothing like walking around like a, you know, anime character with your eyes wide open.
I enjoy it, quite frankly.
Sounds pretty awesome.
Brent doesn't because he hates manga. It had to be said. Were you dilated on purpose, Chad, or was this doctor?
Yes, I was having my eyes. I went in for an eye exam.
Okay, all right. Is everything A-okay?
Well, I have to get glasses for long distance, like when I'm driving.
Oh, okay. So you're nearsighted, like most of the human race,
right?
Like me
and me.
Stupid glasses,
but not Brent because he's perfect.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad you admit it. Thanks.
Welcome.
Oh, and I listened to the BK's bullets that they put on the episode, and yeah, I'm glad that finally aired.
Yeah, that was like beginning of late March, I think.
Wow, that's not that's not too bad for a turnaround for them.
Yeah, I was waiting on the first issue of Asriel.
Oh shit! Yeah, I'm gonna read. By the way, when are you free next week, Brent? Brent, not Brad.
Oh, Brent. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll have to say Cassina for the call.
It's like 3 years, so you get some other guy on the show, and he's trying to co-opt the co-host.
Oh, snap! Right.
It's just like it's a rolling position.
So meanwhile, back on topic, back in the world where we actually talk about things on the show, as opposed to random spatterings of words that might come out of our mouths or our asses. Well, I like that. I'm going to have to remember that. we're talking about icons and stuff. So while Marvel might have more icons, the general consensus in these multiple parts of episode 100 has been that DC Comics has the most iconic, even if Marvel does have more. Now, why is this? Because DC Superman hasn't done much over the past couple of years, you know, movie-wise or whatever. Yeah, he's been in the animated series, as has been brought up multiple times and everything, but why is it that Superman and Batman have the staying power they do? Why have they not disappeared? I mean, why is this? Brent, why is this?
Why is it what?
Why is it that Superman and Batman have not disappeared? Why?
Because they're more iconic than the others.
Why? That's what I want to find out here. Why is that?
Because you can recognize them by their symbol.
Okay, so it is just a symbol, really? I mean, it is just the fact that they have a recognizable look to them and that you know, they're on everybody's clothing all over the world?
I think 75 years helps, too.
Yes, yeah. It does. But what about 20 years of irrelevance for Superman?
20 years of what?
20 years of irrelevance. His comic book has gone through, you know, hard times where it hasn't exactly been on the top of anybody's list. And after Superman 4 and then Superman Returns, he doesn't exactly have that many, you know, outside the comic book world, people screaming, "Yay, Superman! Woohoo! He's the best ever!" I mean,
that's Raph's fault.
It's you're right, actually. I would agree with that entirely, that it is Raph's fault, because he's a Superman fan, and he should know better. But
okay, well, I mean, if you want to really get into it, started reading Superman comics at probably his lowest point when he was Electric Blue, mm-hmm. when he was the least recognizable. Anyway, back on topic. Actually, there's a reason for that. See, Superman is the first superhero, right? He's considered the first superhero created in the comic book age, and he's also the first hero to have his own movie. And now, whenever you think about superhero movies, Christopher Reeve is still the first name you think of. The John Williams score is arguably the most remarkable or memorable, the most memorable superhero theme out of all of them. Do you honestly remember Spider-Man's theme or the X-Men's theme?
Spider-Man. Well, does whatever a spider
I'm talking
can.
About the movies, though. Despite the fact that those movies did billions of dollars and did amazing, what's the theme that everyone remembers? It's bum, 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 bum. That theme is going to stay with everyone forever. Mm-hmm. That theme is, like, the fact that Bryan Singer used it in Superman Returns, which in and of itself is just a total, like, homage to those movies. I mean, the fact that Warner Bros. Actually approved a movie that was nothing but a cop out, a simple homage to you know, an older movie. I mean, think about that.
It took Raph four times to realize that it was a bad movie.
No, six.
Six. Okay.
And then by the tenth time, I was just there to watch it in IMAX 3D. But anyway, my whole point is, like, again, it's because he's the first to do everything. He was the first superhero in comics. He was the first one to do a movie. Mm-hmm. It's despite you don't need the comics anymore. Listen, if they stopped producing Superman comics, A, I would commit suicide, and B, billions of people would still know who he was. You've got lunchboxes, T-shirts. Okay, maybe I wouldn't kill myself, but I'd be devastated. Lunchboxes, T-shirts. You still have the movies on DVD. You still have statues. You still have that S symbol everywhere. It's one of the most internationally recognized symbols, along with the McDonald's arch. You know, like, that's what it's become. Mm-hmm. He is the most recognizable, and that's what it is. I mean, even Batman. I mean, Batman has his iconic theme, the Tim Burton / animated series one. So, I mean, like, there's so much revolving around certain characters that you can't help, like, Batman and Superman, they've permeated every single major media. Spider-Man's only done that recently in the past 10 years.
Okay.
Like, he didn't have a movie until this decade. So there's that. I mean, Superman and Batman have done all these things, and they did it longer ago that you don't need them to be relevant now. They just still need – they'll exist when we're all dead. They'll mm-hmm. exist for, you know, God knows how.
Well, all right. Then you know what, Ange, I'm going to ask you a question that I asked Sean and Jim on part one. Give it 10 more years, and will we be saying that Marvel is more iconic than DC if Marvel continues to put out the movies and DC doesn't?
If they keep on in the direction that they're in, yes, I could absolutely agree with you on that.
Okay.
I mean, especially now with the whole thing with Disney, I mean, and seeing what in that direction that goes. And hopefully, you know, with the new direction that DC's going through, even though it's a little, you know, it's not, they're not as vocal about it. Hopefully, you know, hopefully it doesn't turn out that way. But, you know, there is potential with DC. Mm-hmm. I mean, it isn't just, I mean, yes, Batman and Superman are the well-known ones, but there are other characters that have that, can have that potential of becoming iconic or mainstream as other, you know, as mainstream as Batman and Superman. I mean, yes, there's all talk about about a Green Lantern movie. There's talk about, you know, and there's been talk for a Wonder Woman movie for years, but then for it to actually happen, I mean, that would be just all kinds of awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and a lot would have to, you know, actually go forward for that to actually happen, such as, you know, a director that sticks and a script that that Warner Brothers actually seems to like. Because they've gone through at least three directors and three scripts at this point.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, I just wish DC would get their shit together in regards to that. I mean, there's, yeah. It's weird. It's awkward. It's like, yeah, all the books I read are DC. I can count the Marvel titles I read.
Yeah.
But, you know, all the movies, all the other forms of media, it's like, guess who's taking over?
Okay, then Brent, I'll ask you the same thing. I mean, can Marvel take over from DC on the most iconic front? I mean, if they do continue to put things out and DC continues to flounder like they have?
Perhaps, but they're going to have to put out a whole lot more merchandise than the other company.
Yeah, because merchandise is important. I mean, even if you have a good movie and you don't have any merchandise to support it, then there's no point to it, really.
Yeah. It's going to be a big fight. Big fight. Big fight.
Well, and especially with Marvel now having the merchandising arm of DC at their disposal, of Disney at their disposal. Well, that would be really weird if Marvel had DC at their disposal.
Marvel the T-shirt, Marvel the flamethrower.
but yeah, I mean, with Disney at their disposal, they could very well pump out the merchandise like they've never pumped it out before. But it's got to be iconic imagery. You know, it's got to be things that people will continue to buy, or it's going to be like the Speed Racer merchandise that came out for the movie. It's just going to sit on the shelves and nobody's going to buy it.
Oh, you know what? That just got me thinking. You know what's another part of iconography? That's
the word.
For especially for combo characters, art. Alex Ross.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you think of an epic Superman image, you usually think Kingdom Come Alex Ross, right?
Or John Byrne,
mm-hmm. or Kurt Swan, yeah. Depending on how old you are, or, you know, even at this point, Gary Frank. I love Gary Frank's art.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, Spider-Man has had Ditko, Romita, you know, all the stuff Jack Kirby's ever done. I mean, without stunning imagery, you know, that then the character fades, because people just go, you know, the art's all right. I don't really care for it. The story's not that great. You know, like, it's both the writing and the art, but the first thing that strikes you visually is, of course, the art. You look at the art first, then you read the words.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help but do it. The words are such a small part of the total page, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, art definitely is important, because, and you know, going with what you said with, like, t-shirts, like, yeah, if you don't put Rob Liefeld Deadpool or Rob Liefeld Spider-Man on the t-shirt, you put freaking, you know, Alex Ross Spider-Man or John Romita Spider-Man, and they do it all the time. I mean, I see this shirt's always at Midtown Comics, and, you know, where I work.
Yeah.
Comics Times Twitter.
Okay, all right, enough.
Plug.
I can't shop there for the next couple of months, so stop mentioning it.
And they're not your sponsor.
All right, so roll it over to Ange. Superman has poses that, you know, you'll see on stuff from, you know, underoos to t-shirts to jackets and sweaters and stuff like that. Does Spider-Man have the same thing? I mean, is there a specific Spider-Man pose that you think of when you think of Spider-Man?
The only thing I can think of is the spider logo.
Mm-hmm.
That sticks out of my, you know, but there's potential for it. With the movies and the direction the movies are going, there's potential for it. Yeah, I mean, he is iconic, but it could be more as iconic. He has the potential to be as iconic as Batman and Superman in that sense.
Okay, but yeah, going along with that though, I mean, what is the Spider-Man image that people think of though? You know, other than the logo, because there has to be like, is it Spider-Man swinging? Is it Spider-Man climbing on a building? I mean,
for me, it's the building. I mean, it makes me think of the building. It makes me think of when he was crawling down in the cartoon for Spider-Man and his amazing friends, and mm-hmm. I just dated myself. So, yeah.
Really? I mean, isn't that a bit vain? I don't... there are other people out there. You could just see others.
Well, no, I'm just saying I'm showing
well,
my
nah,
age
that,
in that...
that was a really
I'm showing
bad...
my age in that bad, sense. I just,
it,
you know.
It was a really bad joke about you dating yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Obviously, I've never recorded with me. Don't ever do it. My advice is to never talk to me on a podcast.
Brent would agree with you.
Hey, awkward.
Yeah.
He wasn't asleep.
No, he's not asleep. He just doesn't want to talk.
He's always asleep.
He's not asleep.
It's like another hanging up phone incident waiting to happen.
Please don't egg him on. Don't. Okay? Because I'm going to...
You know, I figured, you know, if I came on the show again, he'd be like, you know, he'd play nice again, but...
Brent, do
it's
you
not you, it's Raph.
Yeah, it's not.
Oh, okay. Just as long as it's not me.
Him and Raph have a hate-hate relationship.
Oh.
Yeah.
It all makes sense now.
For Spider-Man, there's two things I think of, like, as iconic images. First is Amazing Fantasy 15, where he's holding the crook on his arm, he's swinging.
Yeah, good call.
And also, in terms of more recent stuff, in the movie, the upside-down kiss. Everyone references it all the time in, like, parodies or whatever. Where, you know, Spider-Man's upside down and he kisses Mary Jane. You know, that's pretty iconic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, it's like, I can count one Spider-Man story I really love and adore. Or two, actually. And that's Spider-Man Blue and Kraven's Last Hunt. I mean, I'm not as familiar or drunk, you know, or I think of, you know, and it's, I'm a little bit different from the typical person. I mean, it's like, I fell in love with Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane. So, I mean, it's more recent for me with Spider-Man. I think of him swinging. I think of him swinging from building to building.
That's not necessarily, I mean, I wasn't necessarily meaning to criticize you, you know, for not knowing those images that I mentioned, but I mean, isn't that also part of the point we were making, that Spider-Man isn't as iconic yet? Because
he has the potential for it.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
With the direction that they're going in, and especially with Disney. With the, like, I mean, that's carte blanche right there.
Right, so yeah, I mean, in the future he does. But, I mean, right now, I mean, Spider-Man isn't...
I totally agree with you. He is iconic, but he has the potential to be.
Oh, no, yeah. And I think, yeah, eventually, you know, in 10 years' time, going back to the original question, yeah, sure. He could... Eventually, maybe everyone will remember the upside down kiss, or some other, or the, you know, Amazing Fantasy 15 image, or some other image of him like crawling up the wall. You know, it's not necessarily like we were saying before. You know, the icon status, not a set in stone thing. It's malleable. Certain characters will never lose the status of an icon, but some, you can always add on to it. You can add on to legacy. Otherwise, Superman would just be, you know, holding up that car in Action Comics number one, and we'd have nothing else. You're always adding on to stuff, especially in comics, because they're always going to be published. Each company is not going to stop publishing comics. This is the way they keep the copyright. Maybe eventually someday in the future they'll stop. But until they do, and when they do, I'll be out of a job. But until they do, it's going to continue. The legacy continues. It builds. It grows.
Right, but when you say Marvel, I think of Spider-Man. I think of the X-Men. I think of Fantastic Four. I think of the Hulk.
Okay, well,
you know, you say Image, I think of Invincible. I think of Spawn. It goes on. I just, with Oni, I think of Scott Pilgrim. You know, I shouldn't, but I do.
Well, then how hard is it for a character to become the new icon for a company? You know, a character that may not have necessarily been considered an icon for a specific company or a specific brand 10 to 15 years ago, and yet all of a sudden Marvel or DC or whatever decide, hey, this character's pretty cool, let's bring him to the front to see what happens. A lot of the times that doesn't stick. A lot of the times that just, you know, it winds up going away after a while. But sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you get a character that really catches on, and before you know it, they're a top-tier character. But it doesn't happen very often. how difficult is it?
I think they don't take as many chances as they do now as they did before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, like when Marvel Comics took a chance on Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Fantasy. You know, it was a canceled book, and Spider-Man was a throwaway character that turned out to be the launching pad for an entire line, basically.
Like, I mean, you don't really see anything. You know, it's like I read something and it's like, oh yeah, that's just a recycled story, and it's like, well, gee, that sounds encouraging. It's just then you're basically saying that nobody's experimenting with new characters. Nobody is coming out with something, and there's nothing original. I mean, it brings out a can of worms where it's kind of somewhat insulting when you say something's recycled. When you say a story's recycled, I just think that there's a different version of something.
Yeah.
Or it's that writer's perspective of things.
Well, sometimes that can be the case, and other times it can actually be a recycled story that is almost exactly the same as the last one. But I think that in order for this medium to really survive past the next 10, 15 years or whatever...
I mean, do you actually think that... Well, I mean, with the evolution of, like, digital readers and, you know, and things like Longbox, I mean, it's slowly dwindling. I'd be surprised 10 years by now if they're actually still comic, you know, paper books, you know.
Those are never going away. I mean, those are never going away. There will be digital copies, but we're still going to be using paper in one form or another for these things. I mean,
I pray and hope so that's the case, but it's like, the more you see things coming out and how they're tweaking the Kindle and how there's other digital readers coming out and how there are rumors of all these other readers, it's like, you start to wonder whether or not, you know, because I love a paper. I love a newspaper. I love, you know, I don't get it every day of the week. Right. But...
Well, you bring up an interesting point. It's something that we haven't really touched on too much in either of the parts of this episode. Brent, how do you think the digital revolution is going to affect icons? You know, I mean, are there certain icons that you think would be able to perhaps make the transition to digital better than others? I mean, because we've seen, like, there have been motion comics for Batman, and there's been motion comics for X-Men and stuff like that, but we haven't seen Superman yet or anything like that. I mean, how much do you think the digital revolution is going to affect these icons?
I'm just going to throw this out there that Metallica didn't have their catalog on iTunes up until recently, the past 18 months or so.
Yeah.
Well, Metallica sucks.
Adamant about digital.
Right, and some companies still are. They're not embracing it fully. So, but there's icons, and they're still surviving. They finally embraced it, you know, and they were icons before they did it. So
the Beatles, the same thing.
The Beatles as well.
Yeah,
he's still hard to. I don't think they're on anything.
They're not on iTunes, but they have their own digital distribution that they've been doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't think the digital has anything to do with whether you're an icon or not.
Okay. But what if the medium swings that way? What if, I think
characters will continue to be popular characters, and the most popular characters will continue to be the most popular.
But would you think that it would add? I mean, would you think there's more of a chance of adding more potential for new icons or not?
I don't think so. I don't. If you're going to be pushing the same books, if you make the swing to digital, they're going to be making the same pushes for the same books.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are their biggest sellers historically. Therefore, it doesn't make sense to take a chance and not push every Superman or Batman or event book out there that features those characters. It doesn't make sense business-wise. It's a business decision, and I don't think it has really anything to do with the media.
Yeah, I was going to make the same point, actually, because if you think about it, who owns the characters now? It's not the same companies that owned it way back when, even though they are, but this is the point. National, which was DC, National Comics was what DC was before DC. They were a comic book publishing company in 1938. Now they're the comic book publishing arm of AOL Time Warner, one of the biggest multimedia companies in the world. The biggest multimedia company in the world is not going to only focus on comics. In fact, the comics are an afterthought. They let DC guys take care of it. They don't meddle. Marvel, even though it is a comic book company, has already branched beyond that. They're the number eight licensing and merchandising company in the world, and Disney is number one. So yeah. Number eight, that whole thing. they're into movies. You know, it's been said before, you know, it's been danced around. Really, these companies don't necessarily care as much about publishing comics as they are producing other products, like movies, merchandising. You know, like, so this goes back to the iconic new iconic character thing. This is my point. Why would you try to create a new character when you have a multi-billion-dollar company that runs on the old iconic characters? It's like, let's take Disney, for example. Like, you know, when was there a Mickey Mouse? When was the last Mickey Mouse movie? When was the last Goofy movie? You know, all their big characters are in T-shirts and in theme parks and on lunchboxes, and they're not in movies anymore or in cartoons where they started out. They've sort of semi-retired.
Yeah.
So that's the same thing's going to happen to these characters if, let's assume, they stop publishing comics. I mean, digital or not. Digital is just digital and paper. They're just mediums. The characters are going to live on beyond that. Eventually, we're never going to in 300 years, we're not going to use paper. In fact, hell, we might even just download stuff directly into our skulls. You know, you never know. It's just mediums. But the characters themselves, and that's the whole point of being an icon also that I forgot to bring up. They transcend the original medium.
That's
they
a good point.
They don't stay in comics. Like,
yeah.
That's why Superman's the icon. He's in every single possible media.
Yeah.
Same thing with Spider-Man, Batman, Captain America, everyone.
And yet, Superman's never had a good video game. Never.
You don't need to have a good video game. You just have a video game.
Well, but that's but here's what I'm trying to get at, though, is that I think one of the ways that you get the kids into your character is if you actually have a game that's worth playing. You know?
Yeah, and I hope DC Online does that.
That would be nice. That'd be very nice. But I mean, come on, Batman has Batman Arkham Asylum. You know?
It's so good.
You've got I need a system that plays it, and then I'll be able to play it.
I have PS3.
Well, I don't, so screw you.
And an HDTV to play it with.
Isn't that fantastic?
Ooh.
Yeah, and your new HDTV, I'm jealous of any HDTV right now because my 42-inch plasma is back home, and I'm staring at a 23-inch regular TV, and that makes me very sad. Yes.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah. I know.
In a couple of weeks, you'll get to be near that TV, right?
Yes, and then I'll have to wind up back here again for a few months, and then I'll be back at the TV. I like
conjugal
TV.
Visits on your TV?
I like TV. It's fun. Well, the Wii is there. The Wii is there too, and I've got a couple games that I'd actually like to finish. But,
I know.
Yeah.
Bring the Wii with you back.
No.
And then you can play with your Wii.
Oh, you suck. Well, that has been the easiest joke ever since the Nintendo Wii came out.
Since they announced it.
Yeah.
We've never done it on Comic Timing, so why not? I saved it for the 100th episode.
Hey, kids, go Wii. Everybody, run into the corner and wee. Oh, okay, all right. your parents will be cleaning it up for weeks. All right, I'm done now.
Wow,
I've completely driven that into the ground, and it's never coming back.
I think Brent's ashamed to be associated with Comic Timing.
He always is, mostly when you're on, Ruff. The point you make, though, that it does transcend the brand, is I think what's important about being an icon. Is that you have to be able to be everywhere. Kind of all I can think of saying, and I'm hungry, so that's another reason to stop talking at this point. But any final thoughts on the topic, people, before we get to Brandon? Actually, you know what? Yeah, well, let me read Brandon Christopher's comments, and then from there, if you guys have anything to say about that, we can talk about that. So here we go. All right, Mr. Brandon Christopher. First off, congratulations on 100 episodes. You're welcome, Brennan. You long-winded bastards. Not many podcasts make it to the century mark, let alone 10 episodes. What? Don't judge me. I hope that after 100 episodes of talking about rather pertinent topics, you guys will still have many important matters to debate, even though every other episode is a review corner. Oh, snap! If it wasn't for Comic Timing, I'd be short the memories of one bitchin' trip to Shady Maple, two awesome cons in Florida, and a bunch of people who I'm glad to call my friends, Raf included. Now with all that said, to the topic at hand. What company has the most iconic characters? The answer to this question is one which cannot be easily said. Just between the two big two themselves, Marvel and DC, each has a list of characters which are both iconic and fit into some type of iconography of literature, life, and metatext. but being iconic and fitting into an iconography are two different things, and probably a discussion for another episode. With all that being said, I believe that DC has the most iconic characters currently. If you stop 10 people on the street and showed them the Superman symbol, 9 of them, if not all, would be able to correctly say whose symbol that was. The same can be said for Batman, Robin, The Flash, and a whole host of other heroes. The DC universe is packed with characters who are iconic and fit into a certain iconography. This was evident in Morrison's JLA run. Each character on that league fit into a certain iconic archetype, the pantheon of Grecian gods. Superman is Zeus, especially since this was during the electric ice skating costume days.
Yes!
Woo! Batman is Hades, Wonder Woman Athena, possibly Hera, Steel as Hephaestus, Orion as Ares, and etc. Hell, even Plastic Man fit into the iconic archetype as Bacchus, god of wine, women, and parties. He's more of the feel-good god. Even without the comparison to Greek deities, there have been tons of iconic imagery of DC superheroes. The two which stand out most in my mind are both done by Alex Ross, Kingdom Come, and his series of oversized prestige form books like Batman War on Crime. The latter is more pertinent because of the tons of iconic images of each hero. Each panel telling a story in their own right, each one instantly recognizable into the mythos of that character. And that's what this all boils down to. The ability to be recognized by the greater mass to inspire feelings of confidence, hope, and or strength. Sure, people may be able to spot and recognize Iron Man, Spider-Man, and Wolverine. My 4-year-old niece can do that. But what do these characters symbolize other than looking cool? Maybe. But Superman still stands for truth, justice, and the American way. Take that, Bryan Singer. If that's not iconic, then I don't know what is. P.S. Congrats to Brent and Mandy for the engagement. Told y'all he was man pretty. And that is wow. Mr. Brandon Christopher. Oh. Oh, you know it's true, Brent.
Don't you know it? Don't you know
it? Oh, fantastic.
I can never look at Brent another way ever again.
Actually, I think I have a very important question to Brandon.
Yes.
Especially since he had a lot of things to say there, and I agree with some of the points. But the most important question I have, Brandon, is what criteria do you have for Brent to be man pretty? Not that he isn't, mind you. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he never explained why he thought he was man. In the 50 episodes or so since that MegaCon, he never said why. He just said it.
Do you have to know why?
It's a morbid curiosity. It's like driving by a car wreck and looking at it. You just have
you
to
seen
see
the
it.
Person? I mean, you could just tell if somebody. I can't explain.
Did
it.
You just call? No, did you just call Brandon a train wreck?
No, I called him a car.
A car wreck. Okay. All right. Good.
I'm just saying. I mean, I've seen Brent and I've met Brent and I've hung out with Brent, but my requirements for man pretty aren't necessarily the same as Brandon's, and so I would like to hear what Brandon has to say.
Or better yet, how about we talk about what he was talking about in the email?
That is what he was talking about. He did say the words man pretty.
Oh God! All right, thoughts and opinions on what he had to say, because he does make some valid points, specifically about the Grecian gods. Because I kind of hadn't really thought of that myself, and yet they all do sort of fit into the little slots that he gave them there.
I never really looked at it. I mean, like, hearing you when you were talking about it, I'm like, yeah, I see that. I see, you know, well, Wonder Woman I always knew, because, you know, the whole... But, I never looked at Batman as Hades, but...
Well, he is the knight.
True.
You know, I mean, he's the one that strikes fear into the hearts of men, similar to what Hades does.
So Hades growls incoherently.
Thank you. Well, Brent, agree or disagree? Not on the man pretty part.
Brandon said, man pretty.
Right as I'm saying, don't mention the man pretty, he mentions the man pretty.
I to say,
you know, the whole man pretty thing explains everything now with Brent. It all makes sense now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so ever since Brandon said it, I've just been a changed man, I guess.
It explains everything now.
Well, for the first few days afterwards, you had that look of fear in your eyes. I couldn't explain it. It was just an odd sense of fear in your eyes. I don't know.
Want to know how I know you're gay?
How do you know I'm gay?
Because you're wondering why Brandon thought Brent was man pretty.
He never said why. Like, I need to know. I'm just inquisitive. I need to know why people think the way they do. Oh, I don't understand it.
All right. Well, meanwhile,
never ever have I heard like a guy asking like, "Well, why does he? Think
why do you think he's man pretty?
Gosh, it's only on Comic Timing.
Only on Comic Timing would any of this shit ever happen, man. I swear to God. But thank you very much, Brandon, for being a part of the show in one way or another, and for being with us as long as you have. And we'll see you over at Super Show. That much is a given. Brent,
God bless your man pretty thinking heart.
Brent, you want to bring up the episode 100 thread so we can read Tech Jedi's and Spider Stukes? Yeah, Spider Stake.
Spider Stake.
You can read Jedi and I'll read Spidey Steak.
Tech Jedi says, yeah, I gotta say, it's DC.
Yeah.
There you have it.
That's what he says. He also says some other things.
There you have it. Oh, you want the whole thing?
Yes, I want the whole thing.
You wanted the main answer so we could, you know, get our running tally.
No. I want everything he said.
Okay. I'll start over. Jedi says,
okay.
Yeah, I gotta say, it's DC. You can pull someone off the street. I had you there. You can pull someone off the street and ask him who the Flash is. It's a good bet that he knows it's Barry Allen, or at least the guy in the red with the wings and his headwear is the same guy I questioned about Quicksilver, and poof, no recognition. Try it with any number of characters. Although further down the list you go, frankly, the harder it will be for either side to come out on top. Either way, icons are not merely characters you like a lot, or even like a lot for a long time. An icon, an instantly recognizable, identifiable, and definable quantity. There are also characters a given person that you can probably identify with. When you ask a non-hobby guy to rattle off any superheroes he knows, he's not telling you Iron Fist. Icon, finger quotes, gets thrown around pretty easily these days listening to podcasts the last week. I've heard at least a dozen times, usually inappropriately, finger quotes. An important and enduring symbol, one who is the object of great attention and devotion, an idol. End finger quotes. Punisher has only been around 35 years or so, and as a protagonist rather than a hero, he can hardly fulfill the above definition, eh? Canada?
What's this on a boot?
Within the hobby, the story isn't much different. Look at it from the much-bandied-about-misinterpreted definition of icon. There's still more people care and love Flash than Quicksilver, more than they can get behind Batman than Cap, although I'm kind of disappointed that you may even think that myself. And aside from this, aside from Sue Storm, who outside the community can name an influential, important Marvel heroine? So yeah, DC.
Oh, yeah, everyone knows who Spider-Woman and Ms. Marvel are.
Storm.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because of Halle Berry.
And then Raph says, mine.
Mine.
Okay, on to Spidey Stuke. I love saying it that way, even though I know that it's Spidey Stuke or something like that. Happy 100, guys. Congrats. Happy 100, guys. Like, I mean, are there 100 of us? Is that what this situation is? I'm not really quite certain. Anyway.
Ouch. Why are we happy? I don't get it. I need to know.
To the topic. Which company / universe, etc., has the most iconic characters? In popular, I would have to say it's a tie between the two. Marvel has Spider-Man, Hulk, and now Iron Man in the public eye due to massive success of the movie. DC has Batman, Superman, and Green Lantern, and is starting to increase in popularity. To me, it's Marvel. I grew up a Marvel guy, even though now I'm a DC fanatic. Spider-Man is always going to be the number one hero for me, with Batman, Superman, and Wolverine always there at the top. Those are my favorite heroes and always have been. Not one or two, but in general, which group of iconic characters is most iconic, as in for you? When you think of yada, 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 yada. Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, and Wolverine, and in the last 5 years, Iron Man and Green Lantern, are my iconic superheroes and will always stay with me. my iconic female heroes are Wonder Woman, Ms. Marvel, and I'm a huge Raven fan. And when I think of an iconic team, I think of the Justice League and the Avengers. But Justice League, in my view, are the more popular, and I believe will be until the Avengers movie. That could, yeah, the Avengers movie could very well be the thing that changes it. Make a good point there, Steven. I believe in the next decade, we'll see a lot more people classify Green Lantern. And a real shock to me, but Deadpool as iconic superheroes, as both will be getting major PR from their movies. Also to everyone, what comic book villains would you classify as iconic too? Just a thought. Happy 100, and here's to many more. Take care, God bless, Steven. Well, Deadpool. Deadpool.
I like Deadpool.
I like Deadpool too, but is he an icon? Can he ever be an icon?
What, yeah, the B-team icon.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, yeah, he's going to be, you know, huge for a while, but Ryan Reynolds, he's a B-team actor in the first place. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't exactly seeing like a Tom Cruise or a Matt Damon playing Deadpool.
Matt Damon.
That's it. And you know what? That's also it. That's just a limitation of the character. Certain characters are just not going to be huge icons.
Matt Damon.
I mean, I hate to say that about characters because I love all kinds of obscure characters, but that's the point. I love obscure characters. They're obscure.
Matt Damon. I was saying. And one more thing here from Daryl. Congratulations on 100 great shows, and I hope you do 1,000 more. Oh my God, that's just scary, Daryl.
Fuck it.
I think
record every day.
I think the obvious is DC and iconic characters that comic and non comic people know when they see them. It's always Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and Hawkman. Hawkman, really?
Jim, wow. Sean must have wrote this.
Sean must have packed his password or something. Jeez.
All right. Well, thanks for the good words there, Daryl, and make sure to listen to all the shows that Daryl's on. I would name them all, but I'd be here all night.
Oh, so, he's starting a new one.
Yeah, I know. I heard.
Fuck it, cast.
Yeah. Fuck it.
What?
Yep. Daryl's going to start the fuck it cast. Fuck it.
Okay.
Yep.
If you don't listen to 11 o'clock comics, the reference is lost on you.
Yeah.
No, I do, and I'm trying to figure out.
Daryl, every time he leaves a voicemail, he says fuck it at the end.
See, I listen to the voicemails on 11 o'clock comics, and I can't tell who's which. They don't exactly say their names.
It is Daryl.
This is Daryl.
This is Daryl.
I finally got it. I finally understand. Twilight is not about vampires. I get it. Twilight is not about vampires. Pray for me. That's still my favorite, though.
Oh, I tend to zone out the bad email or the scary, the creepy emails. Sometimes I wish they would come out with a non-email version. I think I've heard your voicemail, and I was okay with it, but there was one where I had to turn it off because the voice just annoyed the living shit out of me.
Again, that was...
No, it wasn't you.
Oh, really? Wow.
Was it me?
No, oh. It wasn't anybody on this podcast, but it was like this high-pitched voice of somebody who sounded like he was on acid. I had to turn it off. I wish there was a non-email version of it. It's like, you know, for those who want the emails in there and for ones without the emails.
You mean voicemails, right?
Voicemails. Sorry, yeah. My bad.
That's okay. It's all good.
It's late.
Yeah. All right. Well, since it is late, I think that's pretty much it on this front. Mr. Suhu, where can we find your antics on a regular basis?
Regular basis? Like, come on, Ian. Come on.
On a irregular basis, quite possibly once every 4 months.
Okay, so I apparently discovered that I do a podcast called Geekshinite Network. It's actually a consortium of different types of shows on one feed. I just released episode 69. Yes, I gave Ian that honor of and it's the Sporting Goods where Ian and I talk sports, which is something very rare that geeks don't do that.
What?
Yes.
We do.
Seriously?
Yes.
Yeah.
We like sports. And we don't care who knows.
Well, no, I don't either, but it's just every single time I do, it's like we get emails saying sports.
Well, that's why we devote an entire show to it so people can just, ignore it.
yeah, I don't actually get any comments on the forum or emails or iTunes reviews or anything. So
it's because Juan left.
Yeah, it is.
Smart man.
He is, yeah, man beyond his time. Anyway, you can find all that at the www.geekshinightnetwork.com, and you can always send me email, hint, hint, plug, plug, please send me email at geekshinightpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent.
No, episode 70 is going to have Jamal Igle.
Very cool.
Ooh.
Yeah. Do you discuss the wonders of $30 sketchbooks?
Yes, actually. I actually buy $150 worth of sketchbooks on the show.
Meanwhile, Ange.
You can find me over at Two People Talking with Derek Howard over at comicbooknoise.com/2PT. And you can follow me over on Twitter at twitter.com/acomicbookgirl.
Fantastic. And I do, and I enjoy your tweets.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
It's lovely.
And I am I_M_sci-fi on the Twitters. And Brent is Nightwing BK, even though he only posts like once every 3 months. But he's still on there.
Don't bother following me because that's you're just going to get this show amplified.
Exactly. That's why I wasn't even mentioning you. And
whoa.
Ouch. Hey.
And Mr. Cassina, will you ever take time out of your busy schedule to perhaps do a BK's Bullets?
Once you do a more subdued 101, minus the ref.
All right. That's fine. That's fine. Well, we'll do a review.
Classes on man prettiness.
Perhaps.
We'll tell you what. If I can get a hold of Rebels number 10, since that's back at my apartment, we'll either hold off on doing the review corner until I'm back at my apartment, or we'll just skip that and do that later and just do every other book. Okay? Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. And eventually, maybe you'll grace Sean and Jim with your presence again.
Eventually, we'll talk Smallville. Yeah, right.
Wait, can you still watch that?
Yeah. Hey, come on. Absolute Justice, I don't even watch Smallville, but I'm watching that shit.
I kicked myself for missing the Wonder Twins episode, and that was the one episode I wanted to watch.
Form of water.
God.
Yeah.
Form of Zayna's tampon.
All right. Let me first off thank everybody who has been listening to the show and not turning off their iPods. I want to thank you so much for that. And I want to thank you for more than 100 episodes. We do it because you guys listen. I don't know why you do, but you do.
Fools.
So thanks for listening, and hopefully you'll continue to, and we'll continue putting out the episodes. And Brent, I'm going to actually be sentimental and say thank you for being my co-host as long as you have. You can now quit if you want to.
You're very welcome.
Good. I'm glad. And Raph, stay off my compost heap.
Well, I'll try. I can't guarantee anything. Again, seriously, why the hell do you people listen when I'm on? And two, Ian, why the hell do you ever have me on? I don't get it.
I asked this question. Ange, however, you're welcome back anytime.
Thanks, and thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Pleasure's
and congrats on 100 episodes.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums. They're over at thecomicforums.com. Yeah, and they're graciously hosted by the Comic Geekspeak guys, too. They're over at comicgeekspeak.com. You can, send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes if you want to. That would be
Greatly appreciated. It's been 100 episodes. I'm sure they know.
And the Podcast Alley thing, that's still going on if you want to vote for us. That'd be pretty cool, too. We're proud members of that that network full of comic book podcasters. I think it's called the Comics Podcast Network. And we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at Comic Book Noise / what's the word? League. There we go. Yeah. So for everybody, thank you. And yes, Brent, they do know. They know. And as always, there's always time for Fricassina's prettiness. Bye.
Bye.
Comics.
Again, what qualifies his fan prettiness?
I don't know, man.
The majority of it is all on you because
I said
you recorded. Chris did it after.
Oh. I took full brunt of it, didn't I?
It's not nice, though.
It's all my fault.
You shouldn't have to take the whole. How about Steve Raker telling me about that annual? I never would have remembered to put that in there.
I know. By the way, I cannot believe you put the quest in the. It's brilliant. I had forgotten all about that shit.
Yeah, they're good. And I was thinking, I have these three issues. Where the frig are they going to go? I might as well stick them in with the secret. I mean, I could stick them in with the Hulk or, you know, even Amazing, but they just wouldn't fit.
By the way, I don't know if we're going to talk about it a lot tomorrow, since we've already talked about that particular subject a lot. But, dude, I read Punisher 11 today.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Ooh. And what did you think? Did you like it? Did you love it?
I loved it.
See, I told you.
We're busting our balls about being topical.
You're
not
recording,
are you? I'm waiting for you to tell me as we're ready.
That's what you have to do tomorrow. You have to bust in and say that.
Yeah,
I know we don't want to talk about it, but and then just to get a rise out of Chris, and then it'll start growing.
No, because he was on AC this week saying the same thing. He said that he liked it infinitely more than the list book, and so I think he all probably.
Right. I don't.
We're good here, gentlemen. All right.
All right. Let me
just... All right. Count it down. All right. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That cat.
God
you know?
Bless you. Yeah. No, I see. I see your
just
point.
Just allergic to cats.
See, that's his laugh where he's like.
Wait until you hear 99.5 once I'm done editing and I'm like a half hour.
Come out.
Yeah. Where the hell is that,
dude? I fucking moved. All right, I've been focused on other shit, you know. But
here's what you do: you take it, you turn it into a WAV file, you throw it through the levelator, you bring it back, you tack on the end, you tack on the front. Start from where he said.
My name is Brent Christina, and I put out episodes raw.
Upload.
Ange, what do you think, Ange?
Even she's tired of Raph.
Wow. She drop off? No, it doesn't actually. No.
She's still in the conference room.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me call her back. And we're almost done here because I'm running out of energy.
Did you watch Jimmy Fallon last Wednesday?
No, I didn't.
It was actually kind of awesome. Before the Licking for 10 segment, he starts talking about the song because he's like, we're all working for the weekend, you know. Outfield's saying that, and Higgins is like, no, it was actually Loverboy. And he's like, well, what did Outfield sing? He starts going into Your Love by Outfield, and then the Brutes just start playing the song. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Fun. I wonder if the Roots are going to be back next season.
They'll be back.
Does it really make that show what it is?
I love the Roots.
They're too talented to be that, though.
What show?
Jimmy Fallon. Yeah.
I mean, I like some of the Jimmy Fallon's like sketches, but not enough to like really say that's my late night show.
Right.
It's still Conan.
All right, let's
too old to stay up late.
Yeah, I sometimes am too old to stay up late, and yet for some reason I
watch
it
the next
hell.
Day.
All right. Alright. Meanwhile, in the world of forum comments, Tech Jedi had something to say. Right, Brent? He's getting there.
Mr. Man Pretty?
Yeah.
You know who I hate? You know who I hate? George Perez.
Whoa.
You wanna know why? You wanna know why? Because he's stealing jobs from Americans.
Oh, God.
Like the Cubans. Those are nice fellas. I like them a lot. Thank you. I'm retiring from Comic Timing to pursue my political career. I sound more like Larry King than Lou Dobbs.
Wow, for a moment I thought you were gonna be campaigning to become the next commissioner for baseball.
Or the next commissioner for Gotham, one or the other. Alright. Are you making some sort of clapping noise in the background, Brent? I guess not. Is he even there?
That was just creepy.
Okay. Because I heard something that sounded like a galloping horse for a minute there. All right. And It's one
just
of those.
Roll with it.
It's one of those age-old questions.
If it's, you know, if somebody's dubbed him as that and if somebody else agrees with it, then it is.
All right. Guys, it's been fun. I want to go get some sort of food. I want to be back in 50 minutes for the Sons of Anarchy finale. So I will talk to you dudes later.
Later.
Bye.
Are you seriously going to publish this?
I know. What the hell's wrong with me?
I know.
It's all editing it out. It's all editing out your part.
It's going to be editing for the next 6 months.
Good night.
That's not nice.
Good night, suckers.
Good night.
Good night.